Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in the ring.
Of Leave It in the Ring Radio, my boxing fans official radio. I am your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. Anyways, I hope everybody's doing great. It's a little hot, man. It's been hot over here in Northern California, likewise with Southern California. Hey, a lot of things to talk about in boxing, man. A lot of stuff that we want to, you know, get right to it. You know, I don't know about you guys, man, but this reaction with this whole Juan Manuel Marquez knockout in the first round over that guy named Ramos, I got to say, wow, it was the fakest thing I've seen in a long time to see a KO. I got to hear the thoughts to my co-host Gabriel, you know, or the thoughts of any other fight fans out there, you know. There's a lot of things we want to talk about here, though. We're going to have Devin Rodriguez, Paul Wallach back on Leaving the Ring to talk to us about their showdown on ESPN this past Friday, which was a great, great, great fight between those guys, man. What a war. Both guys should be pat on the back, and we should stand up and applaud them because they definitely brought it to us on the little TV square box for Friday night. They made it fun for us, you know. Other than that, a lot of other things, you know, we got some fights that are coming up. We got to talk about, definitely got to get into that Zab Judah versus Amir Khan. We got to get into talking about Ponce de Leon and Yorkis Gamboa putting in the mix. And then there's a possibility that Madurosian and Angulo might get in the mix a little later after Angulo makes his comeback to the ring. Let me welcome in my co-host, Gabriel Montoya. What's up, Gabe?
Not much, Dave. How you doing, man? I can't wait to get into this Marquez debate. But I'm just looking forward to the fights this weekend. I'm heading out to Vegas probably either late Friday night or early Saturday morning and staying there till Monday. And man, I haven't had a vacation, much less a trip to Vegas, in over a year. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited, dude. I think it's going to be a fun card. That fight, it's a trip. I thought I was going out on a limb picking Judah. And everybody and their brother seems to be leaning that way. It's kind of interesting. You know, the Vegas odds say one thing, but the people are like, they're not having it. They're not betting on Khan. This could be interesting. And they're not selling any tickets. So I'm curious to see that for myself, what the crowd's going to be like, why they keep insisting on putting Khan in Vegas when he's clearly not a draw there. You might even do better in, I don't know, Los Angeles or keep him in New York, but they keep pushing him.
I thought
him,
he should have been in New York. I thought the idea would have kept it at over there in New Jersey or put it at the Madison Square Garden in a small room where you were going to have a lot of East Coast fans come out, especially for Zab Judah himself, you know, come out and support him. Would have been a packed venue. I know they're kind of – what I'm hearing is that, you know, in Vegas right now, the casino is a little bit – it's on the struggle right now of trying to fill in those seats. They're giving comp tickets out to the players out there to try to fill up those extra seats that they have open
there. Yeah, it's like
it's
he was,
that,
he, was
you know?
he has a buddy that's a part-time player, not even like a high roller or anything. He just has a player's card and every once in a while plays. They gave him a free room and two tickets to the fight. A free room and two tickets to the fight. That's just crazy to me. It's like, you know they're doing that with a lot of people, you know. I mean, it kind of makes me want to play the tables a little bit. Get myself a player's card and get a free room next time they put on a fight in Vegas. happening for a few fights now.
All you got to do is play some of those 5 cents slot machines, and you're a part-time player there, man. You know?
I am a part-time player, yeah. By definition, then. I've always been a terrible gambler, so I'll bet on myself if we're playing video games. I'll you know, I can bet on my own skill.
Right.
And I'm actually pretty good at blackjack, but I just, you know, I might as well set my money on fire is the way I look at gambling. This doesn't make any sense to me. I don't even bet fights anymore. Although, if I see Zab at 5-1, that's going to be tough to walk away from. I think it's those odds are crazy, dude. I think it's a much more even fight than that.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. And you know what? Got to get in a little bit about Tarver. Antonio Tarver looking spectacular against Danny Green, you know, being able to stop him on the ninth round. His corner, Danny Green's corner, saying, look, they waved it off. I think they saw enough. You know, I didn't get to see the whole fight, though. I couldn't find it. I stood up till 2 a.m. in the morning here, Gabe, excited. I was all amped up with coffee, ready to go, and I couldn't find the stream. I found 3 to 4. Andre Ward was hitting me up. He was like, hey, you got a stream? I was like, I think I got one. Other fight fans were hitting me up. You got a stream? I thought I had it. I had three of them, and then none of them worked. For some reason, nobody was streaming the fight. So we kind of lost out on a decent fight here. You know, Tarver bringing it on. He was dedicating the fight to Nick Charles. He came out. He did his job. Danny Green, they're saying, and the other side over in Australia, some people are saying that he didn't really train. Probably didn't take him that serious. But you know what? Anytime you step in the ring, that excuse should go out the ropes, because the fact is that you come to fight. That shouldn't be an excuse. You're a professional. You're a prize fighter. You know, be prepared. Come to fight. Tarver did. You know, he came. He looked good, and he got his man out the door.
Yeah, you said it exactly right, Dave. You know, every time you get in there, you've got to be prepared. And you know, I did an interview with Ann Wolf yesterday, and she was telling me the same thing. You know, the ring. She was telling me how James wasn't in shape for that Ishida fight, and how he is now. And she said the thing about the ring is it's the truth teller, the ultimate truth teller. It'll find out if you're a sissy or a punk, if you love your mama, if you love Jesus, if you trained or if you didn't. You know, the ring tells everything. And, you know, that couldn't be more true. You know, he is coming off a major surgery, Danny Green. This isn't the guy that was on the same roll that I hate to take away from what Tarver did, because he went to the guy's backyard. And it was from what I've seen, it's a hell of a fight. I still haven't downloaded it yet. But, you know, he fought through some adversity. He got rocked in the fight. He came back in the fight to stop the guy, and looked great in the last rounds. I mean, he can finish. You say a lot about Tarver, but when he gets you in trouble, man, you're out of there. You know, he's going to let his hands go. And he knew he was going to have a late run. He knew he had to save something for late in the fight if he got him hurt. And sure enough, he got him hurt, and he's went crazy. You know, I don't know if you got to see the last round at least.
I did. I had to see that last round. You know, yeah. You know, my fans were sending it out to me. Was able to see it. I mean, you saw him get all over him. He was on top of him. He was out there. He was doing his job. And you got to give Tarver, the old man, props for doing what he had. A lot of us didn't think he was going to be able to pull off, to tell you the truth. I was really surprised that he was able to do that. But hey, it's boxing, man. I mean, there's no way you can always be right on point when it comes down to boxing. You know, another fight that was great on Friday night. Friday night had some spectacular fights. You had, like I said, you had Wallach versus Rodriguez, which we're going to have those two gentlemen on Leaving the Ring to talk to us about that showdown between them. And on later on that night, you had Diego Magalhães, who was facing a guy that I was pretty high on, Alexis Aracran Perez. And I got to tell you, Magalhães looked fantastic. He's a lot sharper than what we've seen him in the past. It looks like he's finally caught into his zone. You know, he's finally in his rhythm. Perez, you just gotta applaud the guy, because the kid comes to fight. I like to see Perez back into the ring regardless. He's more like he's a gatekeeper. If you want to find out if the guy's got the goods, you put him in with Alex Perez. You find out if he's the goods. Alejandro is just one of those kind of fighters that's going to come forward. He's going to take a beat down. He's going to try to land those shots, you know, and he's a guy that's just going to really test you through that water. He's going to find out if you're nuke or if you're definitely hot and you're ready to step up to the real competition. Rico Ramos, beware. Magalhães looks a little too polished for you. You might want to think about that one before you start calling out Diego.
You know, yeah, I think so. It was interesting watching Alex comes out, drops that right hand, puts Magdaleno down. And Magdaleno responded exactly how you want a guy to respond. Kind of laugh it off, like, okay, you caught me, good shot.
Yeah,
and then he just went right back to his game plan. And he found his range, he stayed with his jab. He did everything that he had planned on doing in that fight. You know, he just basically, you know, I got my bell rung. All right, we're going to treat that like the opening bell. And we're going to go from there. And he did. And from there on, I never really had Alex in the fight after that. It was kind of a strange thing to see him have this guy down, didn't have him hurt. You know, it was a flash knockdown. It just happened to catch him just right. And from there on, it was all Diego. I think he's really, he was a guy that I was kind of writing off as going to be boring, not going to be that great of a fighter. And each time that he comes out, and, you know, this is certainly a step up for him in terms of experience,
you know,
and competition. And he handled it like a champ, you know.
You know, I think
he's good.
I think having his little brother, because his little brother last time when he had Diego stepped into the ring, his little brother, I believe, was on the undercard, or maybe he was the headline. I can't remember. I just remember his little brother with the color hair was fighting.
Yeah. Oh, God. Terrible hair.
Yeah. And he was out there, and Diego was out there as well, rooting him on. And I think he just understood there's got to be a step up. The kid's out of Vegas. He's got to have a step up. He's got to be crowd pleasing, but he's got to be intelligent at the same time. You know, Perez, he's everything that you can basically, what you see is what you get. A pressure Mexican fighter, has no head movement, comes forward, looks for the body shots. Now, when we sometimes dump on referees, we were talking about this off the air, me and Gabriel. Gabe, we were talking about referees doing terrible jobs, but at times you got to give refs, you know, a pass. You got to understand that it's a very tough job to do. You know, Bird, who's a really good ref, a guy that's really kind of out of the scene and allows fighters to do what they need to do in the middle of the ring, does a fairly good job. But it just proves you that sometimes these refs have an off night. I was a little upset because he took a point automatically away from Perez after knocking down Diego from a punch that he didn't even see. He was behind Perez when Perez threw a body shot, and he had called it a low blow. It just shows you that you can have an off night. We should jump. We jump all over him. You got to understand, sometimes we may jump the gun. I'm guilty of it, you know, because we're fight fans. We get a little heated, and that's just the nature of our game. You know, we sometimes react before we think. But it was a great fight. I want to see a lot more of Diego's to get back into that ring, you know, and see what he's got to do. Rico Ramos, I still haven't rolled him off. I know some fight fans are saying boring. Gabe, you said it last week on leaving the ring. Don't want to see him back on your TV. But I definitely want to see what he's got. I think the kid's still out there. He can progress. But knowing that he's with HBO, I don't see him anytime soon mixing it up with Magaleno. I wouldn't want to put him in there. If I was managing Rico Ramos, I'd be like, look, let's swerve away from him for the moment, okay? Let's go after some other guys out there that can be just for us. They're tailor-made just for us. Hey, announcement about Miguel Cotto and, you know, Antonio Margarito. A lot of reaction, a lot of mixed feelings. We got a new boxing line on leavingtheRing.com. You know, it's a voicemail where fight fans can go and voice their opinion. It's at 323-300-5414, 323-300-5414. Have a lot of people called in and drop their thoughts about things that have happened, about the Marquez, about the Tarver, about, you know, this weekend's upcoming fight, Zab Judah, about Cotto Margarito. Gabe, I got to ask you, bro, what do you think? What's your thoughts about this? I've been hit up a lot on the Gmail of leaderringgmail.com about how people feel about this. Some folks are excited because they're saying revenge. Finally, they get redemption from Antonio Margarito.
Well, I think what it comes down to is, you know, people are transferring all everything they found out about the Mosley fight onto the Cotto fight. And, you know, there's going to be a cloud over Margarito and his wins, for sure, because of that incident. But, you know, I like to deal in things I can prove, being a writer. And you can't prove it. You can't prove he did anything in the Cotto fight. You can infer it. You can think it. You can suspect it. You can't prove it. And I think if Cotto really felt, and maybe I'm being naive, that he was cheating and he doesn't want this guy to make any money off of him, he wouldn't do this fight. But he's doing the fight. And so I think what's great about the fight is not just the style matchup. I think it's going to be a hell of a fight. The atmosphere is going to be totally crazy. I may actually have to go out for this. I haven't seen a fight in the Garden yet, and I'd like to see it, especially all the Puerto Ricans that are going to be there to support Cotto, see him try to get his revenge. But if you look at the fight, I think it's going to be a pay-per-view. The beautiful thing is if you really hate it and you think it should be Margarito should never fight again or he should be banned or this and that, well, you can take the power and you can personally ban him yourself from your television and not buy the fight. Don't talk about it. Don't promote it on Twitter by getting into arguments about it. Just pretend it's not happening and just ignore it. Let the rest of us that are going to watch the fight and enjoy the fight do so. I think it's gonna be a good fight. I mean, it's two kind of shop-worn guys that whose styles mesh well. They've got history. What's not to like? You know, it's gonna be a war, just like the first one. And they're probably a little slower now, a little more beat up now. So it's gonna be even more of a war. I think, though, in terms of style, if I have to, you know, lean towards anybody right now, look at the way Cotto's changed his style. He's boxing more. He's moving more. He's using his right hand. His balance is better. He's got a totally different trainer. And you look at Margarito, same old guy. So I think, you know, the odds are probably going to lean towards Cotto, and I'd probably lean towards Cotto in this fight because he's fighting better now.
You know, I'm playing it in my head and looking back to how Margarito looked. It looks a lot slower. That extra weight that he's put on, I mean, if you thought he was slow at 147, he's gone really slow at 154. But the guy still could take a hellacious shot. The guy could still come forward. The guy still throws a lot of punches. Just not the volume is really not there. You know, the volume of punches that he throws is really kind of slimmed down a little bit, you know. And that I think that's where Cotto can take advantage. You know, think about that first fight with Miguel Cotto was that he was doing a fantastic job outboxing Margarito, but what he forgot and what he neglected to do was the money punch that a lot of us fell in love with, and that was a left hook to the liver. He decided not to use that. He decided not to go to the body of Antonio Margarito, but to go to the head. This time around, I think you're going to see more of a well-rounded fighter. This guy's going to probably go from bottom to top, top to bottom, and that should be able to help him out a little bit with Antonio Margarito. I expect a war from two guys, too. They're a little shop-worn, but you know what? It always spells out to be a good fight when both guys' legs are not what they used to be, and they're going to come out, looking to prove something. Antonio Margarito definitely has got something that he wants to get off his chest, and Cotto definitely wants his revenge, his redemption. Let's patch in some fight fans who want to talk about this fight. If you want to call in right now on Leaving the Ring, 347-215-7598. We'll be talking a little bit about Zab Judo and Khan happening this Saturday in Las Vegas. And then you can call in. At 5:30, we're going to have Devin Rodriguez and Paul Wallach on with us to talk about their war on ESPN. But let's patch in some fight fans right now. Let's see. Kevin Sparks wants to talk Cotto and Margarito. What's up, brother? You're on live right now and Leaving in the Ring.
Hey, what's up, Dave and Mr. Montoya?
How you doing, brother?
How you doing, man?
Pretty good. The main thing about that is that I don't feel like Margarito has much to gain from fighting Cotto, mainly because most people already look at him as a cheater.
Right.
And if he wins, people are going to still say that he still cheated the first time. You know, like it's not any proof that he did or didn't cheat, even if he wins. But if he loses, they're going to look at it. They're going to be like, see, he did cheat.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think no matter what he does, if the guy even walks on water, it's not going to make a big difference because people already have their perception of him. They already believe in their heads that he's a cheater. And once a cheater is always a cheater, there's nothing you could really get away from it. But I think a lot of reason why Antonio's doing this is the main one would really have to be it comes down to money. I think, you know, hey, you know what? There's never enough money. You always want more, and it also spells out for another good fight. I mean, where else can he go? I don't think he's probably going to get a fight with Sergio Martinez anytime soon. I don't think that's the route that he wants to go. He probably looks at, look, he's too fast for me. He's in his prime. Why go that route? Why be a one-sided a fight when I can probably go after somebody where I have a possibility of beating him again, and it's going to be a competitive fight, you know?
One issue about the first fight, just to take into consideration, is when they fought the first time, Cotto was kind of, he was a fighter that moved forward a lot, and he kind of backed people up, you know what I mean? Like, he still boxed,
right,
but he was somebody who moved forward, and he was able to throw body punches, as opposed to when he fought Margarito, he chose to be the guy that boxed and kind of circled more, you know what I mean, instead of moving forward the whole time, you know? And I think it's going to be the same type of fight, but I think at their current points in their careers, I'd have to go with Cotto. I just think that in the first one, Margarito lasted that whole time. He took all those brutal shots and just lasted because he was so tough. And I just think his career's kind of caught up with him. And I think it's going to be similar, but I don't think he's going to be able to hold up so well.
Yeah, I could agree with that. You know, it's guys with that kind of style, they tend to just kind of fall right off the cliff, you know, and we've kind of seen it. You know, we don't even know what he's going to be
Hello?
Like after the beating that he got from Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
After the beating he got from Pacquiao, what's he going to be like? You know, what's his punch resistance going to be like? Is Cotto going to be able to put it on him? We do know he still can get to the body a little bit because he hurt Pacquiao in that. But I don't see how you can really bet money on him or think that he's going to pull this out, considering the kind of beatings that he's been taking and the kind of mileage he's got on him. I just think, you know, Cotto needed to cut the amount of movement he was doing in half, and he also needs to stay off the ropes and not invite Margarito in. He's got to accept that he doesn't fight all that great on the ropes with a guy that's bigger than him like this. It
right.
worked against Mosley late, but it's not going to work against Margarito because he's not a headhunter. He's a body hunter. And so he's going to come in and he's going to attack your body and attack everything else, your arms, you know, your hips, and wear you down. Cotto can't do that. He's got to move effectively. He's got to, you know, take his pound of flesh and get out of there as much as possible, and probably fight in for the long haul kind of fight. You know, Margarito's kind of like quicksand. You know, at least in that first fight, he's there to be hit. You can really unload on him and he'll take it flush. He'll keep coming, and you think, well, he can't do that all night. And in the first fight, he proved that he could. You know. And so he's got to stay out of that trap of that, this is so easy, I can just keep unloading, and instead just take a little bit and get out of the way. You know, just don't be greedy. I really like Cotto in this fight this time around. I think they're both worn, but I think he's less worn. He hasn't taken a beating,
you know,
the way that Margarito did in that fight.
That's a good point, too. You know, he did get really, really greedy with that first fight. It was like, this is so easy. I can keep continuously doing this. The only thing that worries me about Cotto is that, you do see some slight changes with Emmanuel Stewart, but the big change that hasn't happened yet is that stamina problem. You know, he still gasses out in those later rounds. That's something that Margarito can bank on. That's something Cotto's really got to work on. He's got to work on registering what to use and when to use it and to maintain. He's got to maintain enough in the tank to last, you know. And he's got to really go in there thinking, look, I shouldn't go try and look for a knockout. If it comes, if it happens, it will happen on its own, not be forced. That's something that Cotto's just got to walk in and with that type of mentality. Overall, man, like I said, you know, it's a good matchup. I know some fight fans are not agreeable about it, but hey, I know a lot of people, especially the Puerto Ricans, they wanted this fight. They got it, and they're hoping to get their revenge and redemption over Antonio Margarito. It's gonna be an electric night, man. That's all I gotta say. And if you're gonna go to if you're gonna go to New York here, Gabe, you just make sure you say you're Puerto Rican, buddy, because you're gonna be flying off that balcony, man.
I'll be safely down
they
on
come
press row.
Are you Mexican? No, I'm Puerto Rican.
I'm going to be wearing like a Tito Trinidad mask.
Yeah, there you go. Or a shirt. You know, I love Puerto Rico or something, man. In a little bit, we're going to call in Devin Rodriguez, and then Powell Wallach should be calling in and talk to us here on Leaving of the Ring. We have some other guests scheduled here on the show. Hey, okay, let's get into a little bit of this, man. We've got at least 7-10 minutes to talk about Juanma Marquez, about that KO loss with Ramos, who definitely looked like a guy that was doing a commercial for Bed and Bath. In my opinion, he looked like he was doing a commercial for Bed and Bath. I just couldn't believe it. You know what? It was really hard for me to sit there and say, yeah, this was a real one-punch KO knockout for Juanma Marquez. To me, I just saw a guy that took a solid hit, but then finally realized, hey, he's hit me solid a few times with that right hand easily. Maybe this is time for me to just sit on my butt. I'm in Cancun. I want to leave after with a clean face and get paid and walk away and have a good payday. Why not do it? I think that's what he did. That knockdown for me was just a little questionable, a lot questionable in my opinion, because we've seen guys get knocked out with one shot and their eyes shut down and their bodies go limp. His body didn't do that. It carefully fell, his butt carefully dumped itself on the canvas and then he rolled down, you know? It was just really, really funny to me. I don't know.
I don't think so. I just don't. I think everybody's kind of flipping out about this thing. You know, he's faking it, and you know, this is a travesty, and look what Top Rank's doing. And, you know, why would you If the goal is to say, you know, Marquez is suddenly a one-punch knockout guy, and now we're going to use this to market the Marquez-Pacquiao three fights. I mean, one, you've got two great fights to pull from. And fight fans that are casual fans that you're trying to capture for your pay-per-view numbers, those people, they're not going to sit there when they see the highlights of the first two fights and go, you know, I think those fights were at 126 and 130. I don't think those were recent. They're not going to know. They're just going to know that, oh, these two guys have fought before, and it's Pacquiao, that little guy everybody talks about. We should probably see this. They're not going to go, you know, well, Seth, what has this guy done recently? Oh, he knocked a guy out in the first round. Well, sign me up for that $60 pay-per-view. I'm going to buy it. It just doesn't make a lot of sense to me, especially since they put it on a stream, which only hardcore fight fans were tuned into. So the idea that Top Rank maybe set this up, you know, is kind of ridiculous to me, even with that company's history of being investigated for fixing fights. It's still kind of ridiculous to me, especially considering Bruce Trampler is a guy that will say, you know, their matchmaker, you know, first-round knockouts do nothing for me. They don't do anything for the fighter. I'd like to avoid them if I can. That said, you know, when people break down him falling and everything, to me, you're trying to apply logic to something that's illogical. A knockout is your brain shutting off, and your body kind of does something crazy, and you're unconscious or you're out on Queer Street in some manner. I think people are just breaking down the tape. They're looking at it in slow motion. Look at him now. You know, there was a Boxing 360 always puts up their funny blogs, their picture blogs. And if you look at the one they did today on Amir Khan, you can see Amir Khan getting knocked out by Brady Prescott. And he kind of shows like five or six pictures of it. And there's one where Khan's kind of leaning down on one elbow, then he's on two elbows, then he's out. Now, you could break that down and say, well, he wasn't really knocked out. He kind of stopped himself and kind of rolled down on his elbow.
There's a difference there, Gabe. I mean, I totally
disagree. They fell exactly the same way, straight back, onto the elbow.
Amir Khan fell back down with his leg underneath him and his body dropped. Where Ramos, his butt first was carefully placed
on first.
Yeah, but his elbow did go down. But it's, if you look at it, it's kind of just like he just rolled down and then he closed his eyes. I mean,
but Paul Williams, he got knocked out with his eyes open. I mean, some dudes punch the air. Some dudes wake up and start punching and attacking people.
That's a perfect example of what a knockout shot looks like when your body just shuts down, where Ramos' body did not shut down. It did not look like a complete knockout. It looked like he got dropped. Which you can't argue. He got dropped, but I think while he was down there, he decided to say, perfect timing for me to say good night and let's just walk away. Now, Top Rank being involved in it, I don't believe that. I'm not one of the guys to say, well, Top Rank has something to do with this, because, like you said, hardcore fans are not going to fall into this and buy into this whole thing that all of a sudden Marquez is moving up in weight and he's bringing his one-punch KO power. I don't believe that, but I do know that the Pac fans that want to see this fight be electrified, have justifying in it, they're going to say, well, look what Marquez is bringing up now. That could be an argument for them, but fight fans like ourselves, we know better.
But even that's silly, because, I mean, like, what's funny is going into the fight, everybody was saying, just not what you're saying, but what Pac fans would say, you know, look what he's bringing. The guy's been knocked out before by punches that didn't even seem that hard. Three fights ago against Jorge Solis. Same kind of thing, right at the bell, catches him with a couple shots that don't really look like much, and they put him down for the count. Now, maybe, you know, the guy, you know, just lays down. You know, maybe he's finding it easier and easier. Who knows? But to me, it just doesn't make a lot of sense, that whole thought process of, you know what, this is a good spot. I think I'll just stay here. And I'm going to close my eyes and I'm going to pretend.
But what fixed what fixed KO makes sense? I mean, I don't think Marquez or Top Rank or anybody else involved, even the matchmaker involved with it, had anything to do with it. I think this was a judgment call on the fighter. That's what I think. I think this was a judgment call on the guy saying, I got put on my ass. Forget it. I'm done. I'm not going to get back up. Marquez was catching him clean, not just once, but numerous times with a straight right hand. And the guy just figured, look, I'm outclassed. No matter what I've done, what I've trained for, I'm outclassed. Why end it in a worse way. Why not just end it on my note? And I think that's what he did. And that note, guess what? It sung fake, in my opinion. I think a lot of fight fans' opinions. It just didn't fit right. You know what I mean?
I think what's funny to me about it is just going into the fight, everybody was saying, even the announcers, what if he gets cut? What if he breaks his hand? This is a terrible decision by Marquez. It's such a dangerous fight. And then he wins easily over a guy that really had no chance to win anyways. He'd been knocked out before. That's why they got him. And now everybody's crying fix. I'm like, well, was it a dangerous fight and risky for him to take, or is it a fix? And I just don't – to me, I've seen fights where, you know, Bruce Seldon is probably a prime example. Or you've seen guys – that shit didn't even land. You know, you've seen guys
right. –
we've seen it before where a guy takes a hit and he just kind of lays down and shit. I would
right.
say Oscar De La Hoya
punch.
Against Hopkins. Oscar De La Hoya versus Hopkins looks more like a fixed fight to me. You're slamming your fist into the ground after you got hit by a body shot. Come on, lady. You know, I don't think so. You know, that one looked more suspect to me. This one, like Dan Raphael was saying when he was squeezing his eyes shut, I saw no squeezing.
I didn't see that. I was looking for every angle. To tell you the truth, listen, I was looking for every angle to see his face expression, to see when the punch did land, and I couldn't find one. They were only playing two angles, you know?
Yeah,
and that was
so
on the right-hand side. That was on the right side of them, and that was about it. What Dan Raphael was mentioning and tweeting, I don't know.
I'd have to look at his Chris John 1 Manuel Marquez fight report for more clarification.
Let's patch in, man. Hey, listen, fight fans, you want to shine in on what we're talking about, the Juan Marquez questionable KO over Ramos? You sure can. You can call in at 347-215-7598. If you're catching this in the archive and you just don't got time to call in today, no problem. Call in our boxing line at 323-300-5414. You can leave myself a question or my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, or our man behind the scene, Mr. David Chen, the producer of Leaving in the Ring. But let's patch in Devin Rodriguez, and then Wallach should be calling in as well to talk to us here on Leaving the Ring. So let's see if Devin answers the phone for us here.
Also just leave heavy breathing on our voicemail if you'd like. That's fine, too.
Yeah, can I please speak to Devin Rodriguez?
This is Devin.
Hey, brother, how you doing, man? This is Dave Duenas with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, here on Leaving the Ring. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Hey, I got to tell you, that fight on Friday night was a thing of beauty. A lot of fight fans were appreciative. You made everybody's Friday night. You started off for the weekend for everybody. Let me ask you this. When you train for a particular guy, you know, because I know every fighter goes, well, this is what we work on because we know this is what the guy's going to bring. You really don't know what you're going to get until you get in that ring. Now, you knew Wallach was a pressure guy. He was a come-forward guy, takes shots, but he gives a lot of shots in return. But when you got in the ring, was it a different feel? Did you feel like, man, you know what? They weren't kidding when they said this guy's a raging bull.
Well, let me tell you, man, like you said, you know, when you go in that ring, you don't know what you're going to expect. But we've seen, his previous fight, we know Wallach well. We know that all he's about is about putting pressure, trying to break down the fighter. And we really prepared well, man. I got to tell you that, you know, I got to thank my new trainer, Fernando Feliz, and my strength conditioner, Matt Bateman, who was working very hard with me, you know. Like I said, we prepared so well. We prepared for 12 rounds, man, and I knew that this guy was going to try to stay on top of me all night. You know, yes, but like you said, you don't know what to expect when you go in that ring, even though you know the fighter. And, you know, I got to say, you know, my thing was, you know, to start out with a jab and stuff like that. But right away, I found out that this guy didn't care about getting anybody a jab. He was willing to take the jab, any punches to get in. So he wasn't respecting any kind of punches, any of them, especially my jabs. He was going right in. So, you know, I had to adjust to that, you know. And the adjustment that I did was, you know, I started getting close to him, push him a little bit, and trying to make a little room just so I could shoot up the uppercut and hooks and, you know, five, four punches combinations. And I think it worked pretty well.
At any time, did your arms or your shoulders, did they feel heavy? I mean, did you feel, man, I don't know if I'm going to make it through another round. This guy just does not let up.
No, but you know what? It's funny you ask that because, you know, I didn't tell anybody this yet. But, you know, the last sparring session, I jammed my thumb into my hand. You know, I jammed it really bad. It was hurting so much. And my shoulder was really sore. You know, it was, I think I pulled a muscle in my right shoulder, which is my power hand. But, you know, as a fighter, you got, when you go to a fight like this, and I decided, you know what, I'm going to the fight. There's no way I'm going to, you know, I'm going to think, I'm going to try not even think about the pain. Because it was very painful when you jam your thumb, you know, into your hand. And what I did was just try to, I had to block the pain, man, and I had to block it. But when I was fighting, when I was in the ring, there wasn't any time when I was tired. Because, like I said, we prepared very well. We knew that we're going to have to be in a top shape for this guy. And that's what we did.
Absolutely. I'm going to pass it over to my co-host.
Hey, Delvin. Congratulations on a fantastic fight, man. It was just bell to bell, just everything I expected. You know, just your styles meshed so well. Just
and
congratulations.
More.
Yeah. I'm curious. When you saw his eyes start to swell up, what was your thoughts?
Well, you know, as it was kind of quick. You know, I hit him once. Or, you know, I was hitting him with good uppercuts and good hooks. I believe the hook was the one that did it. And, you know, I didn't see it. But really, like, the first time it happened, I didn't really see it. And so my corner told me, he said, listen, his eyes are so swollen, man, and you got to go keep going for the eyes. So there was time when I was catching him after that, you know. I was trying to go for his eye, and I was catching him with two hooks at a time, you know. And but I got to give my respect to him. Like I say, I knew it was going to be a tough fight because this guy is a very tough fighter, very determined. And, you know, I give my respect to him. But, you know, it was, like I say, I saw it after my corner told me.
How hard is it to, you know, did you know it was going to be a long-distance fight and that, because he kept crowding you, and it seemed like part of your game plan was to kind of push him off, get a little bit of room. How hard is it to know mentally, I'm going to have to do this all freaking night. This guy's going to be right on top of me. I just got to keep pushing him, keep doing what I'm doing.
Well, like I said, you know, we that's the way we prepared. We prepared for the fight. We wasn't really looking. We didn't think about the knockout. We didn't say, you know, I said, this is a guy that, you know, I'm going to have to take my time. I don't know if you guys noticed, but I really relaxed myself in there, you know. I was very relaxed, mm-hmm. You know, I was very smooth, doing a small step, you know, going to the side, pushing him a little bit, trying to get that room. So this is the type of fighter that you cannot be anxious to knock him out because I've seen him fight. Most of his fights that he won, it was because of that. The fighter, you know, his opponent, they started out very good, throwing a lot of punches, but they kind of got too anxious. And they just burn themselves out. And that's something you don't want to do with a fighter like Pavel Wallach. You know, this guy is like you say, he's nonstop. He comes forward nonstop, and that's his whole game. His whole game, his whole plan is to wear his opponent out.
Now you guys are now linked together. I mean, they're going to be re-airing your guys' tremendous fight on ESPN this Friday again. Is it okay if we because the Raging Bull himself, he's on hold right now. Is it fine? Is it okay with you, Devin? We patch him in. On the interview.
Of course, man. That's fine with me. I mean, there's no problem with that. Like I say, I respect him. He got my respect. And I met him a couple of times. To me, he's a very good person, you know.
You know, the thing that really drew me to you guys when you stepped, first off, we knew that was going to be a great fight, but we didn't expect the outcome. You know, we were looking at, I think a lot of fight fans were looking at the possibility one guy was not going to get out of there without a knockout. But instead, we got two warriors that went in, and you guys put it all on the line. Let me shine in really quick, Paul Wallach, into the conversation. What's up, brother? How you doing?
Hey, guys. How are you? What's up, Delvin? How you doing?
How you doing, man? All right, good, good.
Now, it's always good to hear two fighters that respect each other, they like each other, but then when you get in that square ring, you guys definitely show that there was nothing in between there. That what was in the outside stayed in the outside, but what was in the ring, it was gonna definitely happen. Now, going back and looking at this fight, have you guys had a chance to watch this fight of you two getting it on?
Oh yeah, man. That's the first thing I did the next day. You know, the next day, the first thing I did was look at the fight. And you know, you look at the fight. When you're in the ring, you know, you feel a whole different thing. But when you see the fight, you know. Like from another view, is even better, man. I even saw an even better fight, you know, than what I thought it was.
How surprised were you, Pavel, that he was able to handle your pressure? I mean, he's moving up in weight. You know, you're kind of the bigger guy in that sense. Were you surprised that he was able to withstand all of your pressure?
No, I wasn't surprised at all. I knew, you know, he was going to be ready for the fight. I knew he was going to come in extremely good shape. I don't know why people always say that, you know, I was going to, you know, stop him. I mean, Dublin's very tough. I knew exactly what I was getting into. I knew that I was going to see, you know, the very best of Dublin. So it was no surprise to me at all.
How did you feel at the weight, Dublin, moving up? You know, you've been a career, you know, 140, 147 pounder. What's the new weight feel like for you?
Well, you know, let me tell you something. You know, as a fighter, you know, going back to going up to 154 was, I believe, was the best thing for me, because for the last year and a half, I've been killing myself trying to make the weight. You know, I'm 6 feet tall. It's not easy to make the weight. Like I said before, when I was going to fight at 147, man, I had the last 3 days before the weigh-in, I had to kill myself. I had to really limit what I ate. I had to start drying myself out. And by the time I went into that ring, man, I was shot, man. My body could not react to what I wanted to do, to what my mind wanted to do. So, you know, it was a whole different ball game, man. And you know, like I said, when I was fighting 147, who I thought was making about the weight, that's all I worry about, man. I don't worry about the fight or anything. I got kind of sick, man. I got to tell you, I got sick, man. I got to say, now I understand why people, you know, I was like, how could that be possible? You know, how could you become like that? You know, but I got sick, man. I got so sick that I didn't want to see the scale, man. That's how sick I got. You know,
wow.
It was very tough. But now 154, you know, the day of the weigh-in, I was able to eat my breakfast, you know. I was able to eat my breakfast, and 3 days before the fight, that's the fuel that you take into the fight. You know, it's 3 days before the fight. That is the fuel that your body takes into the fight. And it was great. You know, I was able to eat what I needed to eat. You know, I had my strength condition, my nutritionist telling me what to eat, and everything was great, man.
Well, tell us a little bit. Your eyes started swelling up. I mean, it was bad. It was grotesque. I mean, a lot of people were like, "Whoa, man, it might be stopped." When this happens, did you feel you needed to kick it up a gear? Did you feel like it was going to be stopped? Did you feel you needed to do something extra special? Can you walk us through a little bit of your mind frame of what's going on?
Well, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, my eyes started swelling. I think around the seventh round. I think it closed up by the seventh round. My first thought was, my mind was, all right, man, I gotta go above and beyond in what I was doing in the other rounds, because I did not want to, I don't want the referee to stop the fight or the doctors. Now, if I was getting beat up, if I was getting, you know, shot out every round, I perfectly understand. If I'm taking big punches, you know, I perfectly understand for the doctor or for the ref to step in and stop the fight. But in my heart, I knew that if the fight's close, if the fight's close, you know, it's going to be that much harder for the referee. It's going to be that much harder for the ref, for the judges or for the doctors to stop the fight. I mean, it's just not right. If the fighter fights through, even if, you know, if his eye's swollen or whatever it is, you know, just let him fight to the end. And I knew once I got to the ninth round, I mean, I knew for a fact then that there's no way it was going to be stopped unless I was going to get knocked out. You know, it was very important to me. Like, you know, I had so many people come up. I had so many fans. My family watching the fight. It would have devastated me if they ever stopped the fight. So I'm very happy with, you know, I'm actually happy with the result, even though it wasn't a win. But I'm just glad that, you know, the fight was not stopped.
Now, on both of your guys' ends, I mean, because you have your loved ones watching this fight, you got to say they were on the edge of their seat. It was a nail-biting type of fight. After this fight, what did your guys' loved ones have to say about this fight between you two?
My wife, obviously, my father was worried. You know, people, you know, whatever people might think, you know, they say, I'll take 20 punches, you know, watch your health later on, that eye starts swelling because of the left hooks. I mean, of course, I did get hit, you know, later on. Of course, I got hit. Did it affect me? No. I got to say, I felt great after the fight. Just the grotesque swelling on my face, it was disgusting. It was huge. It was discolored. But beside that, I felt fine. My body felt right. You know, my head felt good. So I was just basically, because I was just trying to tell my family and calm them down, it really looked way worse, you know, than it was. So I was just trying to calm them down and, you know, say to them, listen, it's okay.
Devin, what about you? What about your loved ones, brother?
Well, you know, my loved ones, the first thing they ask, you know, the first thing they say, well, you know, they took another fight off your hand again, you know. They all believe that, you know, I did it. I got the most clean punches. I got the best combination off, and, you know. And the first thing that they said was that, you know, and they wanted, and the second was, when is the rematch? So, you know, that's what's going on. But to tell you the truth, you know, me as a fighter, I got to be honest, you know, I'm not really upset about the result, about the, you know, getting a draw. Even though I do feel like I've got the best punches, and then, you know, and the fight was very close. I think I took in the last two rounds, but you know, I gotta give my respect to Paul Wallach because a guy, you know, like I said, he has his eyes shot at the end of the fight, and he continued, man. Just listen to what he just told me that he said right now to you guys. You know, he was putting all he had in there because he didn't want to disappoint his family, his people. You know,
yeah.
And this is why I you know, I can't be upset with the result. You know, I gotta say that.
Let me ask you guys this real quick. Go ahead, Gabe. I'm sorry. I'll go after you.
I'm just curious. You know, when you guys are involved in a fight like this, where it's just, you know, it seems like the violence is getting ramped up every round, do you know you're part of something special, or you just know you're in a dogfight and you better pay attention?
Yes, I know before when I took this fight, I knew this fight was going to be this way. I knew it. You know, I knew the fight was going to be like this, and I knew that I had it. I got to tell you, man, it might sound crazy to my friends, my family, it sounds crazy when I say, man, I'm excited about this fight because this fight is going to be fun. And for me, that's what it was. It was a fun fight that I knew that Pavel was going to he was going to get the best out of me, you know. And not just that, it was going to give me the opportunity to show my fans in the boxing world that, you know, I have what it takes, you know, to fight. I should be, you know, I should be getting better opportunities. And I say this for me and Pavel, you know, I'm waiting for the, you know, promoter to come up to call me and tell me, you know, let's do this rematch. Let's get it paid. Let's do a good show. You know, let's do a HBO. Let's do a Showtime. You know, I think, you know, we both deserve a chance. And this is what I'm waiting for, you know, and I'm shooting for, and I'm hoping I got my finger crossed for this. You know, I think we both deserve a chance. And, you know, and I think everybody does thinks the same thing.
What are your thoughts?
Yeah.
You're asking if I thought that the fight was, if I knew during the fight that I was part of something special, or if I was just trying to survive it and it was just a dogfight. I did not know that it was so much support. I mean, so much fan outpouring. People are really excited about the fight. They're just saying nothing but good, kind things about the fight, about me and Delvin, and, you know, the fight we actually engaged in. But to me, it was, you know, I had no idea that it was going to turn into this. You know, I knew I was involved in a tough fight, and it was kind of new to me with the eye swelling so bad. Literally, during the fight, especially in the later rounds, once the eye started bothering me, to me, I didn't think about anything else, just... There was one thought on my mind was just fight harder, you know, fight harder, show the doctor, show the ref that you're in this fight so they don't stop it. That was really all my mind. And listen, I'm very happy with the fans, you know, coming, loving the fight. And then, you know, obviously ESPN replayed it, I believe, like 5 times in 3 days. What more can you ask for? You know, that's perfect publicity for us both. And this is what boxing is about, man. You know, I'm just glad the fans love the fight.
Do you think that a fight would like this, okay, does it deserve a rematch, or do you leave the gem alone? You know, because a lot of times you see a rematch happen, and it just doesn't live up to the first one. Do you immediately go for a rematch, or do you just say, you know what, we had a great, fantastic fight. It sounds to me you guys are both happy. It ended up on a draw. but you move on to bigger and better things. What do you guys
think? You know, I got to say for myself, I think this fight definitely deserves a rematch. The fans won. The fan wanted the fight. Boxing is kind of a fight. You know, we haven't seen a good fight like this in a while. I mean, just because we don't have any heavyweights, people always depend on heavyweights. There is no heavyweights out there. There hasn't been a fight like this for a while. You know, you saw the last fight, the best boxer they got right now, which is Pacquiao. You saw his last fight, how boring it was. You know, maybe it wasn't his fault, but it was boring. You know, people don't want to pay for those fights, man, you know. And this is the fight that people wanted to pay for, because, believe me, I got my phone is driving me crazy, man. My phone, Twitter, Facebook, everybody wants this fight, man. This is the fight that we need. We need this fight, you know. But come on, we need to get paid. I mean, I think we deserve this. Me and Pavel, we deserve this chance to get a good payday and make this rematch happen.
Well, look.
Hello. Yeah, I agree with Delvin 110%, Meg. You said it right. You know, he's exactly right. You know, let me heal up. You know what I mean? I'm ready to do it. Listen, he's right, man. It's all about the fans. You know what I mean? We gotta, you know, they spend their hard-earned dollars. You know, they donate their time to come watch the fights. They only deserve the best in boxing and what they watch. So I agree with him completely. You know, first and foremost, I got to heal up. I mean, I'm pretty much healed already. I'm still a little bruised up. My eyes still a little bit red.
I'm not
saying let's do this next month. I'm saying, you know, there's Cotto and Margarito fighting. Why not do the undercard? You know, we could do the undercard for Cotto and Margarito. You know, I think Bob Arum is the one in charge of that fight. And if he's listening to not right now, you know, I think people, the fan want this fight. We deserve a chance. You know, why not do it? This is a fight that people would love to buy. You know, and, man, like I said, I believe we put out a good show. And, again, all I'm going to say is this. I want it. Pavel wants it. The fan wanted it. That's the main thing. They wanted. They wanted to buy this fight, man. So why not do it? It makes all the sense in the world.
Makes sense to me, and that's a perfect venue for this fight. I think, you know, that fight's going to be a war. You know, that might be a lot of violence for people to take in one night. But man, yeah, it would definitely make me want to head out to Madison Square Garden for that one. I'm already kind of on
course,
the fence
right?
about going.
We do it again in the city, you know, and I'm telling you, I'm 100% sure that this is going to be even better now, because people want to see the rematch. People also want to see Cotto and Margarito do the rematch. So it's going to be two rematches that night, and it's going to be a great show, man. I mean, there's no doubt. I don't think anybody would doubt that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you know, Powell, you were in the top rank offices today, and your eye looked really good. It was healing up really good.
What was
the talk about? If you're able to let us know, you know, kind of fill us in a little bit. Is there talk about the rematch? Is Top Rank interested in doing that with Devin again, or are they thinking of a different route for you at this moment?
You know, at this point, I don't even know what's going to happen. I was in the Top Rank office. I really couldn't really meet with anybody. I just, you know, I kind of dropped in fast because I just flew to Vegas today, so hopefully in the next couple of days I'm going to have more meetings. I'm actually here. I want to watch the Amir Khan Zab Judah fight. But I definitely got to talk to him. I got to discuss it. You know, it makes sense. You know, but I don't know at this point. But I'm definitely open to it. I think it would be a great fight.
I think so too, man. And really quick, your guys' prediction for this Saturday fight.
I'll tell you what, man. You know, I like Amir Khan. I like Judah. I believe if Amir Khan takes it a little bit to Judah, you know, Judah's going to fold like he always does after his fifth or sixth round. And, you know, I think Amir Khan has the power. But so does Judah. But like I say, it's going to depend on who wants it more and who's going to take it to who.
Yeah, I agree. I think Amir Khan, either a late stoppage or a decision, 12-round decision, yeah.
Well, man, it was a pleasure speaking to both of you guys, see, especially from that fight there. You know, the only thing that I was just with Devin, I got to disagree. You're saying not next month to see you guys get back in the ring. I was hoping next week, man, to see you guys get back in the ring and mix it up, man.
You see what I'm saying? You
not
see?
Ready
for this. Like, hey, listen, you're playing around, but it's exactly what I'm saying. That's the first thing people ask me, man. This is why I believe we deserve another chance, man. We deserve a good payday. We deserve an EHPO Showtime date, you know, and let's do it, man. Let's do it. I mean, I hope that Bob Arum is, you know, he's a smart man. He's a smart businessman, and I know this is a good fight, and this will be a good show for him.
Absolutely, you know, and for the fights that we have been getting, you know, the guys that are making the big money are not giving us the fights that we want. We just got to go down. I'm a blue-collar guy. Gabriel's a blue-collar guy. You guys are blue-collar fighters, and you guys definitely put in the tools and work and the sweat for this sport, the backbone of the sport. We appreciate you guys coming on. Hey, can't wait to see you guys get back in the ring and do it again, man. It was definitely a gem for the sport of boxing. You guys are going to be forever linked and locked to each other because of that special night on Friday Night Fights.
All right, man. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure being on your show, man. Favell, you take care, man. I hope everything comes
thank
you. Your eyes to cure, you know, as well. And,
yeah, no problem. Man, thank you.
All right, man. Yes, have a
all
night.
Guys. Thanks so much
thank
for coming on.
Yeah.
Pavel, I'll catch you in Vegas, man.
Definitely.
All right.
Bye.
Take care, guys. You know, really class act guys, man. Enjoy both of them. They fight exactly. You know, gentlemen in and out of the ring, the way they fight, too. You wouldn't think these are two gentlemen. You'd think these are two guys that did not like each other. It was almost like a Thurugatti and a Mickey Ward, the way they went at each other.
Oh, yeah.
It was a great, great fight. Now, the big thing, though, was it a fight of the year? It's got some heavy competition.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where you got to sit there and go, a great fight, but fight of the year? I still think that there's some fights out there that can really honestly be above them. But I'm not going to take anything away from both of these guys. This was a fantastic fight. Will I watch it again? It's going to be airing again on ESPN on Friday night. Yeah, I am. I'm going to be sitting there again. And I'll probably be doing the same thing, standing up and clapping and having my beer and spill it here and there. You know, and the floor's all sticky by the end of the night. But that's okay. Because you know what? I know how to pick up a mop.
This sounds like a regular night at your house.
Hey, it is. You know, there's always three things around me when I'm watching the fights. There's my beer, my mop, and paper towels and stuff. You know, just in case. You know, I spill it on myself. I can at least dab my shirt a little bit here and there. You know, so at the end of the night, I smell like a whole brewery here. But it's okay. You know, because I'm
alone. I got Marquez Concepcion still for fight of the year. To me, the knockdowns and the reversal of that fight. It looked like one guy was going to win, then he came back, then he got, you know, hurt again, and then he comes back to win. To me, that's fight of the year, when you just have absolutely no idea all the way through the fight who's going to win. To me, that really clearly defines it. So I'm going with that fight still. You know, a lot of people are picking Ortiz versus Berto. I guess, you know, it was kind of a game changer because that launched Ortiz into the Mayweather fight. Which you can't discount that's huge. Whereas, you know, Concepcion, he didn't really go anywhere from there, you know, to that level. He didn't get, you know, launched into the stratosphere. But still, I just think it's one of those fights. And I think this is where, like, internet journalism comes into play. Because your mainstream guys that may not have watched that fight are all going to probably vote for Ortiz versus Berto because it's the fight everybody can agree on. Nobody can really argue about it, and everybody saw it. But for those of us that like the streams or will hunt down fights for downloads, you know, Concepcion versus Marquez, that's fight of the year. You track it down if you haven't seen it. It's amazing. It really is. So it's kind of one of those, just like this fight, it's kind of humbling to watch.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, I mean, I agree with you. I think that Concepcion and Marquez fight was – really up high there, up there for me. It's really kind of hard to knock it off. The second one in running, which would be a great argument with anybody, you could debate it, is the Ortiz and Berto fight. Was a great matchup. One guy was going in as the underdog and just came out explosive, which was vicious, Victor Ortiz. Fight fans, you know, we want to call in, talk about Zab Judah versus Amir Khan happening this Saturday night in Las Vegas. You sure can. 347-215-7500. 9-8. We're going to patch in some fight fans right now that are listening. They want to talk about that upcoming fight. So let's get in. Chris, you're on live right now. Leaving the ring. What's on your mind, brother?
Yeah, how you guys doing tonight?
Doing good, brother.
How you doing? I'm all right. I just want to say I think this is going to be a pretty good fight. I think it could be really – I think it could be very dangerous for Khan just for the simple fact he's dealing with a fighter who hits hard, like, you know, Maidana hit hard, but Maidana's usually a puncher who swings wide. And Judah's kind of a – I think between the two they have, you know, hand speed, but I would say Khan's hand speed is more of a blistering type hand speed, and Judah's is more of a striking type, you can't see it coming type, you know, like his uppercut. And I believe if he hits Khan with the same uppercut that he hit Cotto with in the first round of their fight, I think he could drop Khan and, you know, stop him. But I see Khan in this fight, you know, using his legs, being patient, and, you know, using range and his jab. And I will say this about Khan, though. If he tries to overcommit himself with his punches, because I notice when he throws shots, he doesn't bring his gloves back to protect his face. He kind of just swings his arms out there and throws combinations. I think that's where Judah can catch him with a counterpunch. But I see Khan winning this fight maybe by late stoppage or decision. But, you know, anything can happen. Judah can catch him with one of those uppercuts or a straight cross and stop Khan.
What do you think, Gabe? What you got?
I could agree with a lot of that. You know, Khan seems to be protecting keeping his right glove by his chin a lot more. But he does it in the beginnings of the fights, you know, midway through the fight. Late in the fight, as we saw with Maidana, he starts to fall apart a little bit in terms of technique. And that's where he can really be had. The question is, you know, how much, you know, will Judah be tamed by that point, by the jab of Khan and by the movement and boxing? Will he have been beaten down, or is he going to still, want it as much as he, you know, as much as he did in the beginning of the fight? Is he going to be deterred at all? That's going to be a big key. I think, you know, Zab, as always, is very dangerous in the first half of the fight. Back end of the fight, he kind of starts to look for the puncher's chance. Sometimes he kind of looks a little bit for the way out. I wonder about this fight, but I really like Judah in it. I just feel that he is on more of a roll right now and really kind of understands what he needs to do more in terms of who he is and what he's capable of than Khan. I don't think Khan knows exactly who he is. He's talking about how he has one of the best chins in the sport in one interview today, and I'm just like, I don't know if you've seen a lot of your fights, but you don't. I'm going with Judah in this. I've always leaned towards him, and now I'm just picking him. I'm picking him by TKO late.
I like what you say, Chris. You think he's going to use his legs a little bit more, sure. Be a little bit more patient. I think that is the right way for him to fight in this fight. You know, he's really got to make Judah work for any of the punches he's going to throw, and he's got to time Judah coming in. In the past, we've seen Judah just gas out because he's the pressure guy. You know, like a lot of times I've said, you know, using speed, it takes a lot. It takes a lot out of yourself. It takes a lot out of your muscles. It gets a little more fatigue. You always, after you throw a combination with that much speed, you kind of have to settle down a little bit to regain it back, you know. And that's what Khan's got to really make sure that Judah does. Use his legs, make him chase him down, make Judah do something that he doesn't want to do, which is be the lead man. I could see that happening. I could see that Freddie Roach and Khan sat there and watched tapes. But I can also see a Khan being an impatient guy, being young, and being that he wants to prove something in this fight. He wants to show that he's the number one guy, that Timothy Bradley did run from him. So he might make that mistake. He might make the same mistake he did with Maidana, become comfortable. He became vulnerable because he decided to become vulnerable. He decided to go out there and think that this is an easy fight. That can happen with Judah because Judah sometimes sits back and allows you to throw more punches than you should do. And then he catches in. Mambuza definitely is a guy that can sit there and go, shit, yeah, that happened to me. You know, I thought I was I thought I had the guy, and then I got caught. I got clipped. The uppercut that Judah throws, man, is just one of those savage uppercuts that you really don't see in boxing. It's not a traditional uppercut. It's one of those that when if it was a slower guy throwing it, he would say, like, dude, don't throw that punch again. But it works for Judah. You know what I mean? It just works for the kid. And Khan, I don't think is going to be able – how do you time an uppercut like that? Ask Miguel right. Cotto. He was getting clipped with that in the beginning of their fight with Zapp. He was getting clipped with it. Even Floyd got clipped with it. There's a lot of guys that got clipped with that uppercut. Costa Zu in the first moments in their first round of their fight, he got clipped with it. That's right. A punch that Zapp, I think, needs to really bank. I think having Pernell Whitaker, how much did it help him? How much is it gonna say, you know what, Khan and Freddie don't have a defense for an uppercut? I like the fight. I think it's a great fight, but I gotta go with my co-host here. You know, I think Zab is a big kid. He can make 147. We've seen him make 147, and I think that he's coming in with a lot of weight behind his back. But at the same time, if he loses, he's going to be like the rest of us. Well, it was Zab Judah. He always loses on his big fights. But I think this time around, man, I think it's due for him. My co-host told me one time, he goes, everybody's right. He hasn't won a big fight, but it's due for him to win at least one big fight.
Right. And I think this fight is interesting because, you know, Judah in the past had trouble with a lot of pressure fighters. You know, bigger, bulkier type fighters, the pressure fighter.
Sure.
You know, hits him in the body. Kind of like Cotto did, Matisse, Claudie. Those guys were pretty big fighters, and they came, you know, even Floyd pressured them. And I don't see Khan a very, physically aggressive fighter. He kind of just uses his hand speed and foot movement. And I think Khan could make a mistake in this fight by overcommitting himself, by throwing those flurries without even bringing his gloves back, which I see him do that a lot. He kind of just
right.
Swings his arms, kind of amateurish. And I think Judah can capitalize and hit him with one of those uppercuts or sneaky counter punches. And I can see that also.
That's the thing. I agree with that. He's not a physical fighter. He's not going to grab you and grind you and clinch with you a lot or wear out your arms or hit you low. Khan's a pretty straight up and down fighter. He's kind of a basic boxer.
Right.
You know, he's got a 1-2, he's got a hook, he's got some body work, but there's no gray area to his game. You know, the way Hopkins has a gray area where he kind of takes energy from you in other ways besides just boxing. And I think that's going to serve him well because, like you said, you know, the guys that beat Judah were physical grinding kind of guys, Josh Claudie, Miguel Cotto, even Floyd. People don't think of him that way, but he's very much a physical, very tactile fighter, putting his hands all over you and grabbing you in different ways, wearing you out. Costa Zoo obviously just caught him with a great right hand because
right.
That's what he does or did. In this fight, you know, I question Khan's chin. I question his power. And I question that he understands who he is.
Right.
All those things to me just lead me to believe that you look at where Zab is and his confidence and everything. I mean, think about how not confident Judah was going into the Floyd fight. You know, he had just lost a fight. He, from all accounts, trained about 3 weeks for that fight. I don't know about the other fights, but I know for the Claudie fight, he was kind of all over the place in his training. He had multiple places to train, multiple cities, not very consistent. Now you look at him in his last three fights, really even going back to the Santa Cruz fight, which was, you know, a gimme, but it was kind of the beginning of Main Event's program with him. There's a consistency to him. He stayed in the gym. He stayed working on his game. He's added somebody in Pernell Whitaker and subtracted somebody in his father who maybe they've just had a roadblock. To me, all those things, you know, if it was a younger fighter, I'd go, well, they don't really know what they're doing, and they're kind of all over the place. But you look at the consistency, you look at what he's added and subtracted, and the gains that he's seen in the ring, and I just think that he's fighting stronger right now. Styles could make fights and Judah loses, but in terms of the role that they're on, I like Judah's a lot.
Okay. Yep, I do too. Hey, Chris, I'm going to put you on hold. We got some other fight fans that want to shine in into this conversation, but I'll get you right back in because I know you want to talk Ponce de Leon and Gamboa.
Okay.
All right, brother. Let's get some other fight fans. Fight fans, you want to call in 347-215-7598. You can right now. The phone lines are open for the fight fans to call in and talk about this fight, or you want to talk about anything that involves boxing. No MMA talk here on Leaving the Ring. Let's get Norman, who wants to talk Zab Judah and Khan on Leaving the Ring. You're on live right now, brother. What's on your mind?
Oh man, we not talking about the UFC. I thought I could call and talk about the UFC with you guys.
No, because you know what's gonna happen? I'm not gonna know anything you're talking about. All you're gonna hear is like, you know when you know when your girl's talking to you about something that you have no interest in. And you're like, go, no, get out of here, really? Get out of here. Go ahead, brother. What's on your mind?
You know what? Yeah, I definitely have to agree with you guys. I think this is Judah's time. It's an interesting fight for a number of reasons. The first reason being, I think that Khan, this is the first time Khan is facing a guy where he doesn't have some sort of gaping physical advantage over him.
Right.
You know, he fights McCloskey, who can't crack an egg. He fights Madonna, who's slow, methodical. He fights Malignaggi, who he's a foot taller than. You know, all of these guys, I think, in some way, shape, or form, didn't have enough pieces to the puzzle to seriously be even money with this guy. And I think for the first time, Khan is fighting a guy who he's even money with. And I actually like this fight a lot better than the Bradley fight because I can envision Khan just kind of pity-patting and running away from Bradley all night because he's so much bigger than Bradley. But with a guy like Judah kind of gets in. If you watch the Mabuza fights, he kind of gets into these Pernell Whitaker, like, you remember those deep knee squats Whitaker used to do? And
yep.
He would kind of, you know, get down real low. And Judah does that. He copies him, and he does that. He emulates that. And I think with him being able to do that, it takes away the fact that Khan can kind of blink, blink, and run away from him. Because now, when he's squatting like that, you can't hit him. Now you have to stay and fight with this guy. You stay and fight with him, you got a questionable chin, you can get hurt, you can get clipped. Personally, I'm going with the chalk. I want Judah to win. I think he will win, but this is just like we said, Pernell Whitaker with the Judah style. It's almost a carbon copy of Whitaker De La Hoya, where you got the guy who can possibly win, and then you got the guy who the network wants to win. They're pushing Khan. They're not pushing Judah. And I could see a fight where Judah wins in the ring, but he loses on the cards, or if it's close, you know, when in doubt, give the round to Khan. And I think Judah will win it in the ring. I think Khan will win it on the cards, though.
There's a strong possibility.
It's a pretty safe bet, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody's just telling me that Judah is plus 300, but the stoppage is plus 400. And it's like, you know, you kind of have to look at it and say, well, Judah, if he wins, is probably going to have to win by knockout. Because you figure Khan's going to be the more consistent offensively. He's probably going to jab more, and he's bigger, so his jab's going to, and longer in terms of reach. His jab's going to land on a regular basis. Whereas Judah has kind of like a pity pat, kind of range finder. That's one thing he hasn't really changed. You know, and Khan's probably going to be throwing the flurry shoe shines, and Vegas loves ineffective aggression. They just like you to be busy, and a lot of times the judges will go with you. So, you know, I think if it goes the distance, it's probably going to be, barring, you know, some sort of dramatic, you know, knockdowns or whatever, and all of a sudden Judah's just in total control, it's probably going to be an Amir Khan kind of decision. But if it doesn't go the distance, I'm betting that it's Judah that makes it so.
Where do you think the loser goes from here?
It depends on how they lose. You know, if Khan knocks out Judah, then Judah's, I don't know, he's going to have to try to rebuild one more time. Who knows if the public will put up with that. And maybe they will. They'll probably always come out for him because he's always fun to watch. If Khan loses, I think he's got at least, you know, one more loss. And I mean, it depends, again, if he gets knocked cold by Zab Judah, it probably is going to be a little while before we see him. He may have to go back to the UK and kind of retool there. It'll be a longer road, you know. I don't know. It all depends. It just depends on how they lose.
Right. All right, cool. Thanks for patching me in. I'm going to keep listening.
All right, brother. Thanks for calling in, man. Put you back on.
All right.
I had to hang up really quick because my Skype was acting up. Everything was just super staticky. I don't know if anybody was able to hear that. I apologize. So I had to hang up and then call back in. So I didn't get to hear the ending of the question of what he was asking. But, hey, fight fans, you want to call in right now, go right ahead. Phone lines are open to talk about Zab Judah versus Amir Khan happening Saturday night. Me and Gabriel Montoya are picking Zab for a late KO or TKO over Amir Khan. You know, think it's which you know, I don't know if you want to say if it's his time, but it's definitely because he had his time too when he beat Corey Spinks, you know, on that rematch. And I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about this, Gabe, but in a lot of ways, to me, this matchup almost is similar to the Corey Spinks fight for Zab Judah. Just that, you know, Amir has a little bit more punch than Corey Spinks. You know, Amir could be elusive, but he does pity pat a little bit, and he could be there for a hit. I could be wrong about that, but
yeah,
find out.
That's true. Yeah, this is gonna be an interesting fight to judge. You know, I mean,
yeah,
it could come down to like Zab landing one or two good shots in a row or at a time, and Khan kind of just flurrying and moving. You know, that's one of the things. You know, guys talk about Khan's power, and I just don't necessarily believe in it. And you look at McCloskey, how hard he was for Khan to hit. And say what Khan wants about the guy was running all over the place or whatever. I saw a guy that was giving good movement in the pocket at times. And when he did decide to trade, Khan had trouble with him. What's he going to do with Zab Judah, who actually can crack an egg, who can crack more than an egg? You know, to me, I don't know. It's hard for me. Maybe I actually can't even accuse myself of being a guy that's on the Judah bandwagon because I never have been. I've just never been a big Judah guy. But I'm also just not a Khan guy. And to me, I'm just really just looking at styles and particularly just where they are right now. When he says, you know, that this is Judah's time, he had his time with Corey Spinks, but it didn't last. You know, he lost his first real defense after that.
Right.
You know, I don't even think it was. I think it was the very next fight, right? It was Baldemir.
Baldemir.
There might have been one round knockout that I'm forgetting. I think the pattern did go with all the guys that had the WBC belt. Anyways, was they would get the belt, they would defend it once, and then they would lose it. And he was part of that
that
pattern.
That belt was being
tossed
around for a bit in that year. I remember that. Hey, Let's pass it to some fight fans, man, and then I'll hold it.
Let me finish the thought real quick, was that his time might – what he's saying that by – this is his time is where everything meets, where experience and maturity and your skill level, and maybe you add
right.
to skill level. I kind of almost agree with him. If he wins this fight, I can totally agree that this is kind of Judah's time. You know, and he's back at a weight that he should be competing at. So I can kind of agree with that.
Yeah, and in the note too, that he hasn't lost a match. He hasn't. Wait a minute. That's somebody else. Never mind. I'm overlooking something. Now, my bad, brother. I'm reading something that somebody's sending me on a direct message saying it's a completely different fight. My bad. Let's pass it. See, this is what happens on Leaning the Ring, man. We have so much stuff going on all at once that I'm trying to maintain everything. I'm reading this. I'm reading that. I lose my train of thought. That's when you know I need to have a brewski or something, man. But right now I'm having water because it's so hot. But let's patch in Craig, who wants to talk Amir Khan versus Zab Judah. You're on live right now, Leaving the Ring, brother. What's on your mind?
What's going on, fellas? How y'all doing this evening?
Doing great, brother.
Good,
how you doing?
I'm doing all right, man. I've been the last couple of days. I've been looking over some articles about the fight, and you know I'm kind of baffled as to. Some of these riders aren't giving Zab Judah a chance. Some of these betting odds aren't giving Zab Judah a chance. And despite the betting odds, which I would gladly take, I think Zab has a very good chance of pulling this fight out if Zab Judah doesn't beat himself. If Zab Judah goes in there and has a very good camp, which it looks like he has, you know, he has new trainers and everything else. But I think if Zab Judah goes in there and does what he has to do, I think he has a very, very good chance of beating Amir Khan. I don't think Amir Khan has met... I mean, he had, you know, his brawl with Maidana, which I was glad to see him pull through that. But Judah is faster. Judah has better footwork. Judah is all that, you know, he can brawl, man, and he's fast. And if I think if Zab does what he has to do, I think that he's going to – if Amir Khan wins this fight, he is going to earn my respect because it's going to have to take everything he's got, and I think this fight will be – not just as much about the fighters, but it's going to have a lot to do with those trainers because I think both of them in the late rounds are going to need to know, you know, they're going to need to have the motivation to get through that and do what they got to do.
I think what y'all said earlier, well, y'all both made some very good points earlier. You know, I agree with y'all about I think if the fight does get stopped, and I think one of Zab's best ways of winning the fight is either by stoppage or, if it goes to the points, by taking control early, jumping on Amir and trying to drop him a few times, trying to get some points. That way, if he does fade in the later rounds, he'll stab the fucking bag, because if it's close, they're going to give Amir a fight the fucking bag. You know, they're going to give him the fight. These judges these days, you know, it hasn't changed. It's a shame, but if it gets close, they're not going to give Zab Judah the fight. That's not going to happen. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm very, you know, I haven't been this anxious for a fight in a while, and, you know, I think Zab can do it, and I'm going to try to win some money. And I have respect for Amir Khan. I have respect for Amir Khan. And I have respect, ultimate respect for Freddie Roach. And I'm sure, I don't know if you guys know, has he been sparring with Manny? I figured he'd be sparring with Manny for this fight, but, you know, which that would help him. But I think that he hasn't seen anything like Zab. If this is Zab's time and he's going to do what he's supposed to do, and I think he should have got his dad out of his corner a long time ago. But if he's going to do what he's going to do, you know, like he can really do it, I think he can beat Amir Khan, man. I think he can stop Amir Khan.
I think it's very possible. Go ahead, Dave.
I was going to say that will of what is really deep in the pit of the stomach of Amir Khan is we're going to find out on that Saturday night.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's why I say if he does win, he's going to have to. I will have ultimate respect for him. I will have more respect for him than I do now, which I have respect for him now. I got more respect for him. Especially when he hit McDonald with that nice body shot, it just, you know, it showed some real technical skill that you can tell Freddie Roach has been working with him, and, you know, that I gained respect for him like that, and able to go 12 rounds with McDonald, and, you know, willing to go out there and trade and do what he had to do. But in this fight, I think Amir's best weapon is going to be to just stay behind that jab, work off that jab, and do what Freddie tells him to do, and stick to the game plan.
That's the key for him. That's the key for him. And that's the thing that I'm wondering is that, see, because you made some really good points here. He's, even though having Manny Pacquiao, you know, sparring with him, he sparred with him in the past, we're talking about a different type of speed here. You know,
mm-hmm.
Zab is an explosive kind of guy. He sits back and all of a sudden, boom, he pops. And then his angles, too, are a lot different. You know, we talk about the orthodoxness of Manny Pacquiao. Zab doesn't throw those similar punches. His punches are a little sharper. His punches are a little more tucked in. You know, where Manny's is straight up above. It's the 1-2, boom, boom, boom. Zab is those sneaky, fast punches. You know, there's a lot of things that I think that Zab could take advantage of, but I think there's a lot of things that Amir can take advantage of. But the big question is you got a young guy facing experience, and sometimes that experience weighs a lot more heavier than you.
Exactly. Yes.
You know?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's a good point. That's exactly what I was thinking about when I was thinking about this last night, and I was just going over how some of these writers weren't giving him a chance, and I'm just, you know, thinking, you know, just different scenarios, and that was one of the things that I was thinking about is pretty much what you just said, Dave, is that, you know, Zab's veteran, you know, him being in the ring, this is a crafty veteran, you know, former world champion, crafty veteran, and I think that is going to be a big major. You know, it's going to be major. He's going to have to use that. He's going to have to use tools that he learned, some technical tools. He's going to have to get beat,
too, man. You know, Zab, too, in the past, you know, I think him and Yoel, his father, hit a roadblock, you know, and when things would go wrong in fights, you know, particularly like the Floyd Mayweather fight or, you know, the Cotto or the Claudio fights, when things went wrong for him, Yoel, I think that one of the first things that a trainer loses when he disconnects from a fighter the way that they have is that ability to turn things around and to get the guy to focus in and listen, okay, things aren't going right, but this is what you need to do to win. And I never really saw that with Yoel. He was never able to turn that corner with Zab. And I think some faith was maybe lost there. And I'm just guessing here. I don't know them personally.
Well, I think that
with Purnell in the corner, I think that he'll be able to do that. They haven't been tested quite to that point yet. But I think the respect level, you know, these guys used to spar together. Zab grew up idolizing this man. They know a lot about each other. We're going to have Ronnie Shields on later to further talk about that. I think that kind of new bond and that wanting to impress the teacher, not only your teacher, but
but your idol.
Pernell Whitaker.
Freaking Pernell Whitaker. I think that's going to do a lot for Zab in this fight.
I think so too, man. That's why I say I think it's going to have a lot to do with the training. And I mean, to be honest with you, I think a lot to do with not taking anything from his father, but I think that just they're a lot alike, and they would butt heads a lot. And his mentality is fuck it, and his mentality is fuck it. So when you got that, you're not getting anywhere.
Yeah.
So I can't.
Yeah.
I can only imagine how many days during important fights, because we all know that how Zab has come kind of short on of good big fights due to his own lack of whatever in training camp. And I can only imagine how many days they may have butt heads, and you know what, they ended that day pretty damn early, and neither one of them probably gave a fuck about it because they were both hard headed. And I think that's why Zab really is focused, because Zab Judah is a dangerous Zab Judah. It's whenever Zab Judah goes in there for a paycheck, or whenever it gets late in the rounds, he starts saying, okay, let's just cash this check, this is over with.
Yep.
That's the Zab Judah that, that's the Zab Judah you don't want to bet on. But a Zab Judah that's going in there and he's motivated and he really wants this and he's willing to go in there, blood, sweat, and tears, and go out there and get it, that's a dangerous fighter, man. I don't care if he's only, 33,
34? I remember that.
Zab
he's
Judah.
Only 32.
32?
I think he barely just turned 33. If he has, but that difference going into that first Sphinx fight, I think he thought, I'm more powerful than this guy. I can outbox him. And he had that kind of confidence, like you're saying, but it was kind of like, if I lose, I can go home and cash a check. And remember watching him in the second fight, and it was a real small physical adjustment, but he was a little he was kind of pushing his hips a little bit forward. You could see which made him kind of sit down on his heels a little bit more to generate more power. And he had this look on his face like, it's a matter of time. I'm going to land my big shot. I'm going to do some good work on my way there. But there was just a different look in his eye, a determination of, no matter what happens, I'm going to get you. And if I see that kind of Zab come out for this fight, this could be a long night for Amir. Or, it could be a short night for Amir. I remember that he was just kind of low, if that makes sense, in his body language. He just kind of was planted a little more, had a more solid foundation underneath him, and then sure enough, he lands that great shot along the ropes and sends Corey Spinks back to where he came from. So
yeah, well, I think
we'll see this fight. That could very
skill level.
That's what
the skill level of Zab Judah. The skill level of Zab Judah. If Zab Judah would have stuck to his career, and did it in a way of somebody that's gonna actually want to be there. It's not necessarily about all these different belts. They want to be the best. They want to be the best. They want to fight the best that's out there. They want to beat the best that's out there, and that's what they want to do. They're making good money. That's that's extra. But they're at heart. And if Zab would have had that killer instinct, that motivation to just go out there and give it everything he had in every fight, Zab would have multiple championships and multiple divisions.
Yeah, I think that's, it's been consistency that's been his problem. I remember watching him, I think I told this story before on here, watching him train for the Mosley fight that didn't happen. And dude couldn't do more than 30 seconds of the speed bag without talking to somebody. Hey, what are we going to do later? What's going on here?
yeah.
It was crazy, and I remember I was sitting there, and I was the only writer there. I'd gotten invited by the management to come see him, and it was out at the 360 gym out in Reseda, out here, beautiful gym. But he's sitting in there, and he worked the pads, and I was like, wow, he looks great. He's never been a guy that's out of shape. I've never really seen him not kind of cut up, he's not fat or anything, but it's a lack of focus, and he was working the mitts. He looked great. He comes down to do the heavy bag, and about 20, 30 seconds in, he turns to me and starts talking to me. And I'm like, act like I'm not here, dude, to get your workout on,
Exactly.
And then,
yeah.
And I think that focus has changed with Whitaker. I think he's showed him, he's 32. When you hit your early 30s, man, you realize I don't have much left, especially for a boxer. There's not much time left.
No.
I've got to accomplish certain things. I want to get that Floyd rematch. I'm sure he wants that respect that he feels he deserves. No one wants to be their legacy to be, you were a front runner and you never quite did it. And
yeah.
Let's talk about the chicken dance. You know, who wants that as your legacy? I think this is a guy that really has started to value his career, value who he is. For me, you know, like you were one caller was asking, where do they go if they lose? You know, maybe it's like Volkov and Rodriguez. If they both have a great showing, there's no reason if Zab loses this fight. You know, Amir's the top 140-pounder in the world, and so is Zab. Why should any guy go down if it's a really good fight and one happens to lose, you know?
Exactly.
I think it's going to be a very good fight. And Amir Khan is a damn good fighter. You know, he take from Amir Khan. He is a damn good fighter. I just think that a well-conditioned, motivated, willing to go out there and give it all Zab Judah is a better fighter.
He made one comeback. The thing, too, with Amir is he's made one comeback. It's not like he can't make another. Same thing with Zab Judah. I mean, I think a lot of people forget that. He's faced some of the best in his career, from Costa Zoo to Floyd Mayweather. You know, even Corey Spinks was a guy that gave a lot of people that with boxing skills, a lot of problems. Craig, I'm going to put you back on hold, brother, because we do have our next guest that's going to be coming on right now. But don't hang up. Stay with us.
I'm going to give him a call, Dave, and bring him in. I'll be right back.
Go ahead, brother. You know, and that's the thing. That's what makes this fight so interesting. You got a guy, you got two guys that made comebacks. The two guys right now that their careers are at an ultra high, the two guys that are really dangling of who moves on to what next. The thing is, though, do we look at it like that? Do we look at this fight as, okay, one guy loses, that's the end of it? That 140 pool of fighters is so thick right now that you can still throw them around and mix them up. Timothy Bradley, we're still waiting to find out what's going to happen with him. What's next for him? Do they go after him? Do these 140 guys, you know, do they stay there? The winner of Amir and Zab, do they stay there? Do they defend it? Do they do a rematch? It all depends. That's the beauty of this sport, is that you can always throw them back into the mix.
We're back.
Once you think that they're dead and gone, guess what? They're back on their feet in the canvas, and they're both having us ask questions. Ronnie Shields, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Doing great, man. How you guys doing?
Good. Seems like yesterday we just talked.
I know, right? time flies, man.
Hey, yeah, time flies when you're having fun, brother. It's always
absolutely,
great having
absolutely.
You on, man. It's always a pleasure having you on, and you know, we always have fun. The listeners always enjoy listening to you when you break down fights and when you add that extra knowledge that me and Gabe do not have, you know. We don't have that trainer eye, that trainer experience, you know, so it's always fun for us to have you on. Now, Kermit Cintron, give us the breakdown. What happened on that Saturday night? What do you think happened with him? You know, did we see the better days pass on? Was that layoff just too much for him? Was Carlos Molina just that good?
Well, you know, I like Carlos Molina. He's a really good fighter, but you know, he's not better than Kermit Cintron. I mean, that's just, you know, just a poor performance by Kermit Cintron. We had a great training camp, but, you know, it just didn't perform, and I asked him, I said, man, why, you know, what's wrong? You know, I'm asking him in the corner, what's wrong? And he said, I can't get off. I mean, you know, he was more worried about getting off than instead of just getting out there and throwing punches, you know? And you know, I mean, I don't know, man. I wish I knew. I really do wish I knew. But, you know, he's back down here now because he's going to fight on ESPN on August the 12th against Antoine Smith. So we bring him back just to make sure that, you know, that it was just a layoff and not, you know, not himself, just, you know, just a done fighter. So, you know, we're going to fight out August 12th. If he's done, or you know, if he's still got life in him.
Do you think is it possible to be done mentally before you're done physically? Is it different with everybody?
You know what? Yeah, I think it differs with everybody. I don't think everybody's the same. I think some people, you know, are different. Some people, you know mentally, you know, okay, it's not there, but physically. It is, but mentally it's gone. You know, but with Kermit, I mean, I really don't see it. I mean, you know, I wish I could put a hand on it, on what, you know, what was really wrong. But like I say, we're just hoping it was just a long layoff. So we'll find out on August the 12th.
That's good that he's coming right back. I mean, that's that's always key for a fighter. You know, they like Areola has been really busy this year.
That's how you get your groove back. You know, you get your groove by staying busy, you know, fighting every 2-3 months or something like that, you know. But these guys want to sit back and make so much money that they don't sacrifice, you know, they don't sacrifice the better their career because they want to fight for a whole lot of money. And sometimes it just don't happen that way. So, you know, they need to stay busy, take stay busy fights.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that's the way to really, particularly it seems like for older fighters, you really can't take all that time off. You've got to stay sharp, stay busy, and keep things rolling. And, you know, Kermit's not that old. He's, what, I think early 30s, 31.
He's 31 years old, so.
Yeah, you just got to shake it off, I think, and maybe just come right back. I thought Molina fought a pretty good fight that fight, though. You know, he seemed really herky-jerky, and he seemed like he really wanted it. And I think that
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, like I say, he's a guy, if you give him confidence, he's going to take full advantage of that. And he's going to get more confident as the rounds go. And that's what happened. You know, Kermit gave him all the confidence in the world, then he couldn't get it back.
Ronnie, when you hear your fighter, when you ask him, you know, you say, like, what's going on? And he's telling you, I just can't get off. Now, when you hear that, do you sometimes think, okay, maybe I should call it off, even though he might be upset with you? Or do you sit there in the hopes that maybe it shakes off and he catches him with that right hand?
Well, it depends on the fighter, you know. The thing about Kermit St. John, Kermit is a puncher. Everybody knows he's a puncher.
Right.
He can hit you with one shot and get you out of there. But it's not like he was taking a whole lot of shots. Carlos Molina was just tapping him with shots, not really hurting him with shots. You know, if it had been a lot different, you know, if Kermit was a fighter who couldn't punch and he was getting hit with everything, you know, then I say, you know, I would have stopped the fight. You know, in that kind of case, I would have stopped the fight. But, you know, but that wasn't the case. You know, Kermit, you know, a punch is always in it until the final bell rings. So, you know, he had his opportunities. Like one round, I think like the 8th round, Kermit hit him with a right hand and hurt him, you know. And I saw Molina was hurt, but, you know, Kermit, he tried to put a little effort into it, but it just didn't happen. It just wasn't there. And if it ain't there some night, you know what? You know, you just gotta take what's given to you and accept the consequences afterwards.
What is the prep talk that you have to give him after this fight? I mean, because obviously this has got to be a blow to the ego. You know, you're off for some time. You have a good training camp, and then you get in there and you just can't seem to get the gears to go your way. As a trainer, what is it that you think you have to do to make sure that discouragement doesn't take too much, that mental game doesn't take too much of the edge when he gets back in with Antoine Smith?
Well, the thing about it was, you know, he came back last night. So, you know, so today we worked in the gym today. And all I told him was, look, the Carlos Molina fight is gone. You can't hop on it. It's gone. Let it go. You know, now you have to realize one thing, that Antoine Smith is your championship. You know, Antoine Smith is his championship, because if he loses to Antoine Smith, his career is gone, it's over. So, and I left it at that. And, you know, we had a great day in the gym today. So, you know, hopefully, you know, you got to build momentum on it. And I worked him really hard today. And, he said afterwards, man, he said, man, you worked me real hard today for the first day. I said, look, what did I tell you from the beginning? I said, this is it. This is your world championship right here. If you don't win this one, it's over. Your career is done.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It is. Because, I mean, he should, by all rights, beat it Antoine Smith. I mean,
by all rights, beat Carlos Molina, too.
Yeah. Well, that guy's turning out to be...
Come on, man. Kermit's fought the better fighters. You know, he's fought the more experienced fighters. And, you know, and then when it's time to shine, you don't. You know, so that's a problem. You know, that's a problem that nobody can fix it but him. He's the only person that can fix it. So, you know, so what you do, you bring him right back. You don't let him, you know, have time to you know, to just sit for 6-7 months and just think about that fight. You bring him right back in the hopes of, you know, of trying to jumpstart his career again.
Really, yeah, it sounds like, you know, jumpstart the mindset, too. Get everything kind of back online. Because, you know, guys, I've seen a lot of guys look good in the gym, and then you see him get in a fight, and then it's like, where's the guy that was in the gym, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes there's that disconnect. And maybe timing is everything. I mean, because Molina seems to be on a little bit of a roll. You know, he did really well against Lara. That was a draw. Some people think, you know, he won that fight. Now this fight. Sometimes timing is everything, and resumes and everything kind of go out the window, and it's just kind of how you're fighting right at this moment, you know, which I think plays a lot into this fight this weekend. But before we get to there, I'm curious, you know, we haven't talked at all about the Williams-Lara fight, one of the most controversial decisions in years. They suspended the judges. Give us your take on the fight.
Well, you know, looking at the fight, Lara did everything that I asked him to do in the gym. Everything I showed him to do, he did it in the fight, you know. One thing I'll have to say is one thing he didn't do. A lot of, you know, in the gym, you know, you teach guys how to, you know, what the game plan is and how you're going to fight it. You know, I mean, look, you know, we all watched the Sergio Martinez fight. We saw he was hitting Paul Williams with left hands all night long. So that was our plan. Throw the left hand because you're not going to miss him. But you got to follow up some time with the hook, you know. Paul Williams would have never saw the hook coming, and then I think the fight would have been over with, and then we'd have never had this controversy that we have now. But, you know, but throw that out the window. You know, we got to take the fight as it was. You know, look, Lara, you know, of course Paul Williams is going to throw a lot of punches, but just because you're a volume puncher, that don't mean you can, just hook up. Because you throw me so many punches, then the guy, that don't mean that you automatically win the fight, you know.
Exactly.
Right.
I mean,
look, Lara is a good counterpuncher, and that's what, and I told Lara, he had to be Lara. He can't be Sergio Martinez because he's not a huge puncher. He can't be anybody but himself. He's a counterpuncher. So, look, you know, you can't fight far away all the time. You got to fight close. And, look, you catch a few punches and you fire back. You know, the most important thing is landing the harder, cleaner shots, and that's what he did. He did exactly what he was supposed to do. And, look, I don't know what those guys were looking at. The thing about it is everybody around the world saw the fight, and everybody is in agreement that Erislande Lara was the winner of that fight. Now, you suspend three judges. Why do you get suspended for doing something right? That's what they say, you know. They say, well, you know, there's nothing we can do about the decision, but we're going to suspend them. So why punish somebody for something that if they didn't do nothing wrong, why you suspended them? I never heard of that.
Yeah, it's funny that you say, you know, I don't know what fight they were watching. I don't think the judges knew what fight they were watching.
Exactly.
It certainly wasn't what we were watching. But
absolutely.
I think it really is just, Aaron Davis, you know, the head of the New Jersey Commission, kind of covering his ass. I mean, you know, it's like the government doing an investigation on itself and going, well,
right,
I think we're innocent of wrongdoing, you know, but let's
right,
have a few scapegoats. I mean, bottom
right,
line is he put him in charge. He put these guys ringside.
Absolutely.
And they didn't belong there.
Absolutely.
You know?
They didn't. They sure didn't belong there. You know, I mean, look, you know, I think, you know, just like fighters, you know, you put your career on the line every fight. You know, look, a loss hurt some more than it hurt others, okay? But a judge has to realize that these guys both work hard. They're both working hard to win. You know, just give the guy who won the fight the way it's supposed to be done. I mean,
exactly.
It's not supposed to be any controversy over this thing. Look, sometimes we're all looking at the same thing and we see something different. But in this matter, everybody saw the same thing except for three judges.
Yeah.
And, of course, Williams' corner, you know, look, when you got your trainer telling you, after the ninth round, you need a knockout to win, and you agreeing, yeah, I know, then all of a sudden after the fight, oh, that's motivation. That's just to get me up, motivation. Come on, man. That's ridiculous.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, that's not very good motivation either.
Just, no. You need a knockout to win? What kind of motivation is that?
Yeah, you're doing terrible, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
And you say, I know. Yeah, you're just being forced. That's just <simple. laughs> you know, it doesn't help me. Like Dave telling me at the bar, you need to sleep with every woman here or you're a failure. And I say, well, I know.
I know. You know? I know that's not going to happen.
Yeah. I know that's not going to happen.
Oh, man.
That doesn't make any sense to me. It just, but, you know, moving forward, what do you think you take the rematch or is this a win and you just move on?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's what we have to do. We have to just move on. Now, everything has been done that was supposed to be done. You filed an appeal, which we knew what was going to happen with that. But, look, HBO knows, you know, everybody in the world knows. So, look, we offered a rematch. They say no. You know, they didn't want no parts of it. Well, about a year and a half ago, he was supposed to be the most feared guy. Remember we talked about this the last time?
Yeah.
He's supposed to be the most feared guy in boxing. Now I'm only fighting maybe 2 to 3 more fights. I mean, come on, man. This kid know that his career is in a dump right now. He know he lost his fight, and he know if he's a man of honor, and then he comes up and fights Everson De Lara again, he know his whole career is done.
Yeah, I don't see how he gets through it because. I don't see Paul doing anything really different. They kind of refuse to change. Whereas, you know, like I saw that right hook landing a little bit with Lara, but it was usually after he came all the way in, Paul would throw some flurries on the inside, and then when he was leaving, Lara would leave with a right hook and then reset. And like you said, if he came back with that right hand, it would be over. It would have been over.
Oh, yeah, it would have been awful. It would have been awful. Absolutely.
You know, so, yeah, I agree. I think Lara can build and Williams. If there's any justice on the networks and, well, you know, they let Ross Greenberg go, so maybe there is. But if there's any justice on HBO, Showtime, anywhere, they'll put Lara on and treat it like a win because they should. You know, I want to see him again.
Absolutely.
You know, and I think he erased a little bit of that. Is he able to handle the elites and is he just purely a boring Cuban fighter? I wasn't bored. I don't know anybody that was.
No.
I don't think anybody was bored. I really don't believe anybody was bored because it was look, Paul Williams made the fight. You know, we got to give him that much credit because of his style.
Right.
You know, but look, but Everson De Lara did. He boxed the way he was supposed to box. He boxed. You know, so you had a boxer against a volume puncher. And look, the boxer ultimately won.
Yeah, that's what it comes down to.
Absolutely.
When did you watch the fight? Did you go back in the dressing room or did you?
To watch when I got home the next day.
Okay.
But, you know, I mean, but that night, I mean, I was on the phone with all my guys that was up there. And, you know, I mean, everybody was just livid, man. It was just crazy. But, you know, they was more concerned about Lara because he had to go to the hospital because of that hematoma he had. And Friday night, he had a small fracture. But, you know, the doctor told him he's good. He means he's got to sit out 6 to 8 weeks, don't do anything. So that's what he's going to do. And then, you know, then we have to figure out what our next move is.
Speaking of next moves, too, what's going on with Guillermo? Now, he's the mandatory for Rico Ramos. Is that going to happen?
Yeah.
Do you think that's going to happen, Ronnie?
It has to happen by December the 9th, or Rico Ramos is going to get stripped of the title. I mean, they both signed, Rico Ramos and his people signed, and so that the Japanese guy, they signed with the WBA because, you know, they had to pay Rico step-aside money to let them go ahead on the fight because they made the fight without, you know, they skipped over Rico, you know. So he said, okay, I'll step back, you know. I mean, his lawyer, Pat English done a great job, like always. And he made the WBA step up to the rules. So they both signed that whoever won would have to fight Guillermo Rigondeau by December the 9th or get stripped of the title. So we're going to
tear that kid apart.
Oh, absolutely.
I just don't see how
I mean, when I look at lucky punches, you know, and then Peterson saying, well, the Martinez punch is a lucky punch. Like, no. The punch that Ramos landed, that's a lucky punch.
Absolutely. The guy was getting beat. Man, he was doing the six rounds, and all of a sudden, bam. You know, but look, a fight isn't over until it's over. So, you know, that's what I wanted Cinturón to do against Molina. I wanted that lucky punch, but we never got it.
I just think that's pretty easy money. I mean, no fight's ever easy, but I just think Rigo is. He's another guy, I think, that has that stigma of he's very boring. You know, a friend of mine that's on the beat after seeing the fight in Dallas calls him Rigondeaux now. You know, and there's always the nicknames. But I think he's got every capability of changing that, though. He's got such power, skill. You know.
I don't know if you've seen his last fight when he fought in Ireland.
I did.
Did you see that fight?
I did. Yeah.
You know, and that's going to be the Rigondeaux you're going to see from here on out, you know. I mean, you know, that's one guy I sit down with, and I just told him the way it was, telling him how it has to be, you know. In order to make any money in this sport, people got to want to come see you, you know, and that's just the way it is. And he said, okay, you know, no problem. You know, and he's normally, on a guy like that, he will move around on him and, you know, and then score points and then not get hit. But, you know, I told him, look, man, you got to take chances. He's a very strong fighter. You know, he can hurt you with the body shots, or he can hurt you with his shot to the head. You know, so, you know, and I say, man, look, just get out there and try it. Look, we can always make adjustments, you know, if you don't do it in the first round. But, hey, he went out there, he did it. Afterwards, he told me, you know what? He said, that's the way I got to fight all the time. That's it. There we go.
That's scary, the division.
Absolutely.
Particularly for the Cubans, too. You know, there's not really, other than, I guess, you know, maybe Florida, like the Miami area, there isn't really a spot that really comes out to support those guys.
Not at all.
You know?
Yeah, you're right. Other than Miami. Miami's probably the only place that they will really go to, you know, to get to support, you know, the Cubans. But, you know, I mean, because they have their own community, you know, basically, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't know if they all over the place like everybody else, you know. They love Miami. I mean, they're 90 miles from home, so, you know, that's where they want to be, you know.
Right.
And they love Miami, you know. That's like Cuba to them.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah, you don't see a lot of Cubans out in L.A. I certainly don't.
Not at all, man.
No.
You don't.
Yeah.
You know,
there's
very few of them here in Texas, too. I mean, you know, like, all the ones that are here in Texas, whenever they train, they here. They at the gym. They're watching them train every day.
All five of them,
so,
right?
Absolutely.
Well, let's get to this weekend's fight. You know, obviously, you've worked with Pernell for years and years, and you're familiar with Zab, so I kind of have a feeling of what you're going to pick. But break down the fight for us. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think first of all you have to look. Okay, I think you look at the corner first. You know, Freddie Roach, and then you got Sweet Pea Whitaker. You know,
right?
Okay. Freddie Roach is very successful. You know, and I guess all his success comes from Manny Pacquiao, from one guy. You know, and you know you could say that. You know, I mean, I guess you got to give him that. You have to give him that honor because, you know, he's done a great job with Manny Pacquiao. But, you know, Amir Khan, you know, just looking at this kid, I mean, where did he come from? I mean, you know, I guess he went to the Olympics for England or whatever, whoever. And then he, you know, turned professional over there. But I never even heard of him until he got knocked out by Brendan Prescott. Then all of a sudden, he signs a Golden Boy, and he's on HBO, and he's a superstar. But who did he beat? I mean, I'm looking at the record. Who did he beat? He beat Madonna. He beat Madonna. Okay, he beat Madonna. Okay, I give him that one. But come on, man. You know, the kid he fucked his last fight? I could beat that kid right now. You know, and I ain't fought in 20 years, and I could beat that kid. You know?
Yeah.
Come on, man. And then he looked bad doing it. I thought it was terrible. But I just look, you know, when I break down fights, I just look at the experience of both guys. You know, I mean, come on, I trained Zab Judah for the first 5 years of his pro career, so I know Zab Judah. You know, mm-hmm. The Zab Judah that I trained is so much different from the his attitude is so different from then until now. You know, back then he was a hard-headed kid. He didn't listen to nobody. You know, he wanted to be champion of the world when he wasn't, you know. But now, you know, he found God, and, you know, he has a different attitude about everything, you know. I mean, just sit down talking with him. When I was in Vegas a few weeks ago, I sat down and had a long talk with him, and you know what? You know, I said, man, this guy has grown. He's grown up. He realized that it's more to it than just getting in that ring. You have to work for it. That's simple as that. And that's one thing I do give Amir Khan. He works. He works and he works hard, you know, in the gym. I mean, you could see that. You know, I saw it in the Madonna fight, you know, when he got hurt real bad. But look, his stamina took him to where he needed to be. And he was able to finish the fight on, you know, really strong. So I like that in a fighter. But let's go back to the skill part, and to the fights that both of these guys have fought. Look, Zab has fought everybody. Cotto, Mayweather, you know, the last guy hit is Mabuza,
yeah,
you know, Lucas Matisse. I mean, come on, man. You don't see that on Khan's resume. That's nowhere.
Right.
You know, he hasn't fought anybody with the near experience as Zab Judah has. You know, what they're hoping for, they're trying to fight him like Mayweather fought him. Look, but come on, Khan can't touch Mayweather when it comes to skills, okay? Mayweather
right.
has the skills to sit back and lose 4 or 5 rounds and then all of a sudden just blow you away for the last 7 or 8 rounds.
Right.
Khan don't have the mobilities. He doesn't. They hoping Zab Judah comes in there and like fights like an amateur, jumps on him and run out of gas. That's their hope and prayer. But, you know, with my boy, Sweet Pea in the corner, I know what Sweet Pea is going to make him do. You know, Sweet Pea is going to make him do what he do best. That's box. He'll make him use his jab, you know, and every time Amir Khan gets close, he will run out combinations on him. And let me tell you something, Zab is going to hurt him, and he's going to hurt him bad. And I'm telling you right now, what my prediction is, Zab is going to knock him out before 6 rounds.
Wow. That's a bold prediction, man. 6 rounds. You see, is it the uppercut? Is it going to be, you know, combinations? What punch do you think? I don't want you to give away a game plan if you've got it, but you know,
I don't have a game plan.
Yeah,
I don't. That's just a personal prediction from me.
Wow.
That's it.
This is a personal prediction.
But look, Amir Khan gets hit with uppercuts. Okay.
Right.
You know, every time Zab gets close, if that was me training it, you could bet I'd be having him throw uppercuts all night because he don't know how to get away from uppercuts. You know, he don't know how to fight close. He
right.
needs distance. So, you know what? I'm getting close to him, and I'm shooting him uppercuts, and look, I'll bust his chin up, you know?
Right.
I'm telling you, Zab is going to hurt him and hurt him bad.
Do you think that's the lack of teaching your fighter how to inside fight, not knowing how to protect yourself from an uppercut?
Of course it is. Come on, man. I mean, no, look. I mean, that's what a trainer's job is, to teach his guy what not to get hit with. You know, if you see, you know, look, if they did what I thought, if Zab's side did what I thought they did, look at the tape, about
mm-hmm.
the fight with Madonna, and saw how he was getting hit with them uppercuts, and you don't exploit that, then that means you didn't do your job.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And it's nothing, you know, I mean, look, who knows? I mean, maybe, you know, Freddie took him to the gym and said, you know what, this kid is going to be shooting uppercuts at you, so now we're going to have to teach you how to get away from these uppercuts. So, hey, well, we're going to find out if they did their job or not.
Yeah, I think it really just starts there. And you know, Parnell is actually, I'm not sure how long he's been training, but he's certainly the younger trainer between the two men.
He is the younger trainer.
Yeah.
And he is younger than and Freddie, you know, anyway, but definitely he's a younger trainer.
Yeah, in terms of experience, too, if the fight gets hot and adjustments and like that, that's one thing I do question about Purnell is he going to be able to communicate with Zab? Is he able to, you know, certainly he's going to be able to see it just because of who he is. But
right,
is he going to
exactly.
be able to communicate that? That's going to be key.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the thing. Experience in the corner is going to be a big key if the fight goes into the later rounds. I think the corner is what brings, you know, that's what brings the guy home. The corner
right.
has to bring him home. So, you know, if he has a lead, then you got to tell him you got to protect the lead. If he doesn't have the lead, then you know what? Then he just got to go all out and go for it. He just got to go for the knockout then, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank you so much, Ronnie. It was enlightening as always. Dave, I don't know if you have any more questions, but always an education, man. And I'm taking Zab. I'm taking him by TKO late, but I'm kind of liking that KO. I like the conviction. I like your pick.
I like the same thing, you know. You know, Ronnie. I mean, I think you're absolutely right. It was like, you know, like I said earlier, it's always fun having you on. You always bring in that extra insight that fans and listeners want to listen to, man. And it's always appreciative and can't wait to have you back on. We never get enough of you.
Well, I appreciate it. So like I said, you guys, anytime, I'm available anytime. So, you know, just give me a holler, man, and we'll talk about it.
Will do. Are you going to be down in Vegas?
Actually, no, I was supposed to be down. I had Tarvis Sims that was going to fight Peter Quinlan. But
right.
Tarvis got his wheel broke, and, you know, so we had to pull him out. So
yeah.
I was really
excited
about that because I really, really was looking forward, you know. I was looking forward to going down there and being there and, you know, around all the excitement. But
yeah,
I'll be watching on TV, though, for sure.
Yeah, I'm going. There's nothing like a Vegas fight, and this one just seems like a 50-50 affair, you know, and that's the way.
Oh, without a doubt.
Yeah, that's the way you always want to go to Vegas. Who wants to see Mosley
Absolutely.
Pacquiao where you know who's going to win? I want to see a fight where I don't know who's going to win, you know?
There you go. I know who's going to win, but I just want to be there anyway, though.
Right on. All right, Ronnie. We'll catch up with you, man.
Okay.
Take care,
all right, man. You guys take care.
You too, brother.
All right.
Okay. All right. Bye.
That is funny,
That's
man.
Funny. I like that, man. KO at 6.
He said 4 or 6. I mean, you, man.
Yeah.
You know what, though? It's not too crazy to think that could happen.
No.
Yeah, you know, and I could see it happening, though. Like I said before, you know, it's happened to Khan before, but it's also happened to Zab before, too. That's what makes this match so good, in my opinion, is you got two guys that have been knocked out, you know, early in their fight. You know, it's going to be one to talk about, definitely on Saturday, man. Can't wait. Definitely cannot wait.
I want to be in Vegas now.
Right now, huh? I know. They had a Floyd Mayweather. They had a Floyd Mayweather open workout too out there too, and now I'm over here going like, damn man, I should have went out there as well. But oh well.
I can just, you know, I'm sure I can catch it on FloydHype.com. But I'm probably gonna take off. I know I'm such a hater. I'm sorry. I'm gonna get there. I know. I'm gonna get there early, and I'm gonna stay late. We're taping. I told Steve I haven't been in Vegas in over a year. I haven't had a vacation in that long. So we're taping TNR or the next round show on Tuesday, so I can stay in Vegas longer, kind of enjoy poolside and relax, man. I can't wait to get out of LA and into the desert for a couple days. It's always fun. In Vegas, just because it's, you know, when you go to other events like the Top Rank one that was here this last weekend or a couple weekends back, the fight hotel is usually somewhere other than where the venue is. You know, you have to drive to it
right.
and hang out there. In Vegas, everything's under one roof, so everybody's hanging out at the same bars. They're all, you know, hanging around the different lounges. All the fight people are all concentrated in one spot. And then, you know, it's just a short walk over to the arena. Plus, you got the media room there, and every writer and boxing person in the world is particularly if it's an international fight like this, UK versus USA, everybody's in there. You know, you have your Bert Sugar and just everybody. That's what I love about Vegas fights. You know, there's just nothing like them. And the buzz might not be there because this fight's probably not selling well. But in terms of just fight people and that kind of excitement, you know, we're all excited about it. It's just going to be fun, man. I'm trying to will myself there by talking because I can't get there soon enough.
Well, all I know is that you just make sure you don't come back with a missing tooth and got married type of thing, okay? You just come back to Steve Gable. But so, hey, we're going to patch in our next guest, Carlos Molina, talking about Ronnie Shields, you know, and his fighter not being successful against a guy that's been a working horse. You know, he had a fight with Harrison Lara, and then he gets in with Kermit Cintron. So I'd like to hear his thoughts, the fighter's thoughts, and see what he's got to say. So let's patch him in, and then a little later we'll let in the fight fans that want to shine in and talk about Amir Khan versus Zab Judah. I see some guys holding on. Please be patient, and then we'll patch you in as soon as we can. Then we got our fight schedule. So hopefully Carlos right now answers the phone. You talk?
No?
Yeah, can I please speak to Carlos Molina?
Yeah, speaking with who?
What's up, brother? This is Dave Duenas with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, here on Leaving the Ring. How you doing, man?
Good. I'm doing good. I just got out of the gym not too long ago.
Right on, man. So you're back in the gym. You're working out, getting ready. Is there a particular reason, or are you just a gym rat?
Yeah, I just like to work out. I don't like to go back to the gym out of shape, you know?
I hear that, man. I mean, so let's talk a little bit about your past fights here. You know, for a minute, some people, you know, people didn't really know who you were, and then all of a sudden you just came out, you know. And then the first fight with Laura Arisalandi, Laura, you know, people were saying, okay, this guy got to be a fluke. But then you get in with Kermit Cintron, now people are in belief. How does that make you feel?
I mean, are they in belief?
I am. I'm one of them. I'm in belief. When I saw that loss, I was like, this guy, he's a volume guy. He's on top of you. Why wouldn't you not believe? But, you know, people have their judgment. I'm in belief. I don't know about you, Gabe. Are you in belief a little bit here?
Yeah, dude. I thought you fought a hell of a fight. You know, you seemed very, very sharp. And, you know, while Cintron was a little dull, it's all about fighting the guy that's in front of you. And I thought you fought a hell of a fight. And was never at a point where you were not in control. I was very impressed, man. Very impressed.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate that.
Yeah, not a problem.
So, at any time in that fight, with Killer Kermit Cintron, did you feel the right hand? I mean, did you feel that you were fighting a full-fledged back into the ring, Kermit Cintron, or were you aware, like, this guy's been off a year and a half, I'm going to jump on him, I'm getting a year and a half ring rust guy?
I mean, well, we came in there expecting him to be in top shape. You always got to go in there like that, you know? I mean, whatever he did between his, on that year off, you know, that's not my fault, you know? All you got to do is, you know, think that he's in top shape and prepare for that, because I mean, when I fought Lara, I was off for 2 years, you know, because I was in the gym every day. So, you know, I was expecting the same thing from Kermit Cintron, whether he was or not, I don't know.
Gabe?
Yeah, you know, looking at Kermit, I was ringside for the fight, and I always think you can always tell more just in person, you know, than on TV. But just seemed like Kermit, at first I was like, oh, he's just kind of more relaxed and trying to box. But it's just, to me, looking at both you guys, you seemed up for the fight, and he was trying to warm his way into the fight, and you just didn't allow that to happen. You never gave him a reason to get confidence, get a rhythm, anything. And you fought like a herky-jerky, in a sense. You were giving him little feints, and then you would kind of shuffle forward and throw a punch, then move. You were just kind of off rhythm and disruptive for him. I just don't think he ever got on track. And you know, the year, like you're saying, that's not your problem, and that's nothing for you to worry about.
Right.
You know, the fight is the fight. And for me, I just thought you fought exactly how you should. You didn't just come straight to him. I think people hear the name Carlos Molina, they look at your record, ah, rugged Mexican. He's just going to come forward and take punches. And I think you kind of come under the radar a little bit, and that you're a lot trickier than people would give you credit for on paper.
Yeah, because you know, you were throwing straight shots, over the top shots, up in the middle. I mean, you had a whole variety. You know, is that your normal style, or was that just particular? You figured out your rhythm, and you figured out, hey, I can do a lot more if I did it this way.
I mean, I guess that's my style. We try not to concentrate on one thing. We try to, you know, work on everything, not just one thing. I mean, we like to work defense and, you know, uppercuts, body shots, hooks. You know, we try to do everything. That's what they say, you know, that I'm not good at, you know, I'm not the best at anything, you know, but I just do everything. And, you know, I like that. That's true, you know. I mean, I don't have to be the, you know, the best at anything. As long as I do everything equally, that'll help me out.
Giving him those headshots, man. You're snapping back his head. You know, had him put. You were pushing him back. You could see the discomfort in Kerman Cintron's face. You know, even though you got the win, even though you were dominant in that fight, was it satisfying? Would it have been more satisfying to knock him out?
Yes, most definitely. That's what I wanted to go for, and. I did want the knockout, but I mean, you know, I'm learning from these fights, and I feel like I'm learning with every fight, and I'm growing with every fight, and just gotta finish these guys off, and that's what I'm working on too.
Right, definitely, Gabe.
I'm just curious, you know, we have never really had a chance to talk, and for one, you know, why did you have such a this information might be out there. Forgive me if I'm asking a stupid question, but why the long layoff from 2009 to 2011? Because it seemed like, you know, it wasn't like you were on a long streak of losses or anything. You just kind of stepped away from the sport, and now you're returning, and you're fighting at such a high level. Why'd you go?
Well, what happened was, I don't know if you heard about that I had a promotional contract with Don King.
Oh, okay.
Because after I won that fight with Danny Perez for the NABO belt,
right?
He offered me a fight with Corey Spinks, and then I had to wait to fight Corey Spinks, and then I ended up sitting until I fought Corey Spinks, and then the fight never happened. So then, you know, we parted ways after that. I mean, after a couple of, you know, we agreed on a couple of things, and then now we parted ways, and then as soon as I was free, and I was able to fight on my own, and then that's when I got the Lara fight. You know, I wanted to come right back and fight somebody that was rated or something, or ranked, you know, make up for all that time that we lost.
Did you stay in the gym the whole time, though? You didn't, like, walk away from the sport. You were just kind of on hold.
Oh, never. Never. I was in the gym more than most fighters. I was in the gym all the time. I mean, I love to work out. Either way, even if I'm not fighting,
right,
I love to work out. And we're just, you know, working on. I knew that I was going to get my opportunity, so I just stay in the gym and stay focused and, you know, don't lose my patience or anything, because it was hard. I mean, it wasn't easy. I don't ever want to do that again, but
now,
you got to keep going.
Sure.
You know, now you fought Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. twice, right?
Yeah, twice.
Now, what's your take about that? I mean, because this happened in 2006, you know, and now you see him, he's up in his pedestal, and he's doing what he's got to do. But what do you think about that now? I mean, is that somebody you're interested of trying to get? I mean, you guys went twice, you had a draw with them, and then you lost to a majority decision the second time around. How competitive was that for yourself? I mean, was the timing wrong? It was pretty early in your career, like I was saying. What's your take?
I mean, my take is, we were both, I had nine fights when I first fought him in Mexico, and I got the draw with him. And, I mean, I felt like I beat him that fight, the first fight. The second fight could have been like a draw. But either way, you know, that was a six-round fight, you know,
And, you know, I feel like a third fight should be, will be good. You know, maybe down the line it'll happen. You know, hopefully, I mean, I'm all game for it. I mean, I don't care. But, I mean, if they want it, then, you know, I'll take it anytime. But I think a fight between us in a 12-round fight, that'll settle it right there.
From Lara to Cintron, where do you go from here, man? I mean, what's the next step? What is the talk of you getting in the ring with now?
Well, I heard Paul Williams is one of them, and they wanted a rematch with Lara, but I don't think that's going to happen because
that's crazy.
My advisor is Tecubas, and he works for Lara too, so, you know, he doesn't want to have us two fighting unless it's for a world title. So maybe down the line later on it'll happen, you know?
Oh, I gotcha. I gotcha. I thought you meant I thought you were talking about the Williams Lara rematch. Williams is crazy.
Oh no!
Fight. Yeah. Yeah. That would be a fun fight. But yeah, you know, when the manager's got two good fighters, why narrow it down to one? That doesn't make any business sense. I understand that.
Maybe later on.
Sure. How about?
I still want that one.
Do you look around and say, you know, can you go higher? Can you go 160? Or do you really like where you're at in terms of your weight class?
Yeah, actually, I could go lower because, I mean, I've been fighting at 147. Yeah, 147 and 154. And I actually, we've been looking at a fight with Mike Jones at 147.
Really?
Yeah.
That would be a good fight.
Whichever one comes first, you know, I don't want to sit around and wait. I already sat 3 years. I don't want to do that anymore.
No, definitely, man. I mean, so is that like a pickup rush for your management team? I mean, you're sitting there, you're back in the gym. I mean, you're obviously showing your motivation that, you know, you're a fighter. This is what you do. You're a gym rat. Does it make them pick up to get something for you, whether it's a name or just a fight? What is it that you're looking for yourself? Do you want a name, or do you just want to get a fight so you make sure that you're busy?
No, I want a name. I want to come up as fast as I can. I mean, I never had an option of who I fought. You know, I always fought whoever they put on there. And, you know, that's, I want to, you know, I wish I could fight a world title, a world champion. You know, I wish I could fight Miguel Cotto or, you know, Canelo Alvarez. They're both in my weight class. Or, you know, anybody like that, anybody in the top 10 or something. Or, you know, if I can't get the Paul Williams fight. But, I mean, I ain't going to just sit around and wait for these fights to happen. You know, I want to stay busy in the meantime. So, I mean, I'll take a fight for now. But, I mean, I want to fight anybody right now.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Conyers fight was kind of a nice stay busy fight for you in between. I mean, it was, you know, pretty nip and tuck and kind of tough, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't Lara and it wasn't Cintron, you know. So for you, it's just a matter of just staying sharp, staying ready by being in the ring as opposed to being in the gym.
Yeah, because right now I still feel like I had seven amateur fights, and I feel like I was learning all through my pro career, and I still feel like I'm learning right now. I still feel like I'm learning right now, and I feel like with every fight I'm growing and learning, and, you know, I want to keep learning. I want to keep growing, and I know I could be better. I want to do better.
How did you get into boxing? How did you come to the sport?
I went to the YMCA and I started at the Y.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
Yeah. I started at the Y with one of my friends, Jay Worth. And then after that, I told him that I wanted to take it more seriously, and then he took me to a boxing gym, and then a real boxing gym, and then, you know, 6 to 6 days a week, and then from there I never looked back.
How old were you?
I was 17 when I first stepped in the gym.
What was it about it that made you say, you know, I need to take this more seriously, or I want to take this more seriously?
You know what? It actually helped me out. Boxing helped me out a lot, because, I mean, I grew up in the, you know, south side of Chicago, and I was raised in the south side of Chicago, and, you know, before I started boxing, you know, I used to drink and, you know, smoke and, you know, and then as soon as I started boxing, I saw discipline in there, and, you know, little by little, I stopped drinking, you know, I'll probably drink once every week or once a weekend, and then less and less, and next thing you know, I wasn't drinking at all, so, you know, it helped me out a lot with that, too, and helped me out being, a better person just in general, you know, all around. Disciplined.
You know, it's crazy because, you know, we've had you know, in the past on here on Leaving the Ring, we've had like David Diaz, David Estrada on the show. And, you know, anytime I tell people like, yeah, there's a pretty big population of Mexicans in Chicago, here in California, every Mexican they look and they go, really? I didn't know there was Mexicans in Chicago. And there's a lot of fighters that come out of Chicago. Why do you think that? There's no praise about that, you know. Not a lot of Mexican fighters get their dues coming out of Chicago. I mean, you guys have brought in some pretty good fights and some pretty good big names out of there.
Yeah, that is weird. A lot of people say that. Chicago's like the second most populated city with Mexicans in the nation. I don't know. They always talk bad about the Midwest fighters, and you know, because they say there's not too many good fighters in the Midwest compared to other states, you know, like California and Texas and New York and so. But there is some fighters that got their, you know, the name out there from Chicago. But yeah, you're right, not too many.
Now let me ask you this, you know, because with Kermit Cinchone, we just had Ronnie Shields on a little earlier. Would you be opposed of giving him a rematch? I mean, is that something you would be interested in? Because, like, they felt like, you know, Kermit in the mid rounds had told his trainer, "I'm not myself. I just can't get off." Do you think that it's your duty, or do you think it's okay to say, okay, you know what, you weren't yourself. You know what, I'm a man. I'll give you that shot again. Or do you look at it and go, look, man, It's already done. I need to move on to bigger and better things.
Well, I mean, like I said before, I mean, if there's something bigger or a better fight out there, I'll take it. But if not, I'll fight him too. I mean, I'll do it again. I know that I could beat him. And, you know, the reason why he couldn't get off is because I didn't let him. You know, I was
right.
He knew that he was I was working my defense, and he knew that he was going to miss. But that's the way he feels. I mean, I'll do it again, most definitely. I would love to. This time it'll be 12 rounds, though, hopefully.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, man. I mean, because it was a good 10 rounds of good fighting there that we saw on that Saturday night. Hey, Carlos, man, I want to keep you on it much longer, brother. I appreciate you coming through. Hope to have you on again, man, and to hear who you're going to fight next. Hopefully they don't shelf you, and hopefully they don't keep you on ice, brother, because myself and like Gabriel here and the rest of the listeners and the fans, man, we really want to see you get back in there. You know, you have an exciting style. You come to fight, and Chicago needs another Mexican fighter to put him back on the map.
All right, I will for sure, man. Thanks for having me out. It's been a pleasure.
Okay, brother.
Yeah, man.
Take care.
Take care.
You know, I like the kid, man. I definitely do. And
cool.
You know, yeah, you know, I mean, the thing I like about we get a lot of volume punchers, and you have to appreciate them while they last, you know, like Juan, the Baby Bull Diaz, Paul Williams, guys that come with volume. They just come to fight. They just let their hands go. And you have to appreciate it because it doesn't last very long, you know? And sometimes they do. Maybe they last a little longer, you know, but they use up everything that is given to them. They leave it out there in the ring. They make sure whatever talent they have, whatever athleticism they can muster up, they have to bring it every single fight. So that takes away a little bit more of their lifespan in the ring. So you got to appreciate them. That's my opinion. You know what I mean, Gabe?
Yeah, I know I do. You know, they don't last long, and they kind of have a peak, and then it's gone, you know, and then they just kind of roll on down the hill. Although I wonder with him if he's a volume puncher or he's kind of a hybrid, because he boxed in spots. It wasn't like he just, like Paul Williams seems to just throw everything but the kitchen sink at you, whereas there was a lot of craft to what Molina was doing, I thought. You know, it wasn't, you know what it reminded me of almost is like a pitcher that doesn't have a fastball. But he's got everything else,
right?
You know, he didn't, and so he's kind of throwing some junk at you. He's throwing some off speed, and then he mixes in something hard. He just kept Kermit off balance,
and
I think Kermit.
He was giving him angles
footwork
too.
Yeah, I think Kermit was like, "I can't get off," but it was like, I don't think he knew where to get off too. You know, there wasn't really that target in front of him where he could just land and throw. And I think he was hoping that. You know, maybe when he sparred with Molina, it was years ago when Molina
you know, wasn't as crappy as he is now. I mean, obviously he stayed in the gym, so he's been learning stuff in the gym and working on things.
Well, one thing I noticed, too, that he brought to the table when he faced Kermit Cintron is that when he did back him up, when he did tee off of him, when Kermit tried to earmuff, Kermit was square. You know, he squared the shoulders. But what Molina didn't do was square shoulders with him. What he did is he gave himself angles. He made sure that he was outside, and it was his left hand that was in the middle pocket, and he was able to throw over the earmuff with his right hand, you know, and that made Kermit always turn on his own. You know, Kermit was earmuffing but couldn't see him because the fact that his earmuffs was blocking his visual of Molina. That's one thing that you got that, you know, that it's something that's practiced in the ring. That's something that somebody with boxing knowledge has got to kind of show you, because you do now see that trend with fighters. If you square up, they square up with you and they want to bang standing in front of you. Molina obviously did not do that the whole time in the fight. He did that sometimes, but he didn't do it continuously in the fight.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, I think he just kind of understood who to be in that fight, you know, that, okay, this guy's chance is to hit me with this right hand. Well, I'm going to just take away that chance, you know, and let's see what Kermit has beyond that. And once he did that, it was pretty much it. You know, somebody just threw me the name of a pitcher, Jamie Moyer. Don't follow baseball, but thank you. somebody without a fastball. Jamie Moyer, exactly.
Yeah, we know who he is.
I have no idea. I was horribly scarred by baseball as a child, and I haven't recovered.
Funny thing, my grandfather, you know, was a big time baseball guy. You know, he played in Mexico. He was in the major leagues over there in Mexico, which it doesn't matter because it doesn't mean anything here in the States. But you know, and he wanted us to be baseball players. So this pitcher, this little kid, I had real curly, curly hair, you know, and they put me out there on the left side of the field, and I cried because I didn't want to be there, you know. I didn't want to play baseball. So I was scarred for life because the ball kept coming my way, and I was sitting on the grass, you know. It was one of those kids that sat on the grass and pulled at the grass. And here comes this ball flinging and hitting me numerous times over the head. Maybe that's why sometimes, man, I get stuck on stupid because of that ball. So don't ask me to pitch. Don't ask me to catch because it's just not my game here. Hey, fight fans, really quick, man, just to make the announcement. Leave the ring. We finally came up with a boxing hotline for hardcore boxing fans, boxing heads themselves that want to vent, they want to put out predictions, or they just want to talk strictly boxing. You could do it. It's a 24-hour voicemail line. And at the end of the week, what we'll do, we'll either put it up on Leaving the Ring, or we'll throw it up on YouTube, or we'll throw it up on the site. The best calls, the best questions, the best vents, the best rants. Doesn't matter. The number's going to be 323-354-14. Now, it's an experiment with this number here, just to see how many fight fans get involved and interact with it. We thought it would be a little fun. But if we start getting these overwhelming calls, we'll change it to a 1-800 number. So everybody that listens to us from the UK, Puerto Rico, Mexico, all throughout the states here, have a chance to call in. So we're just testing it out for maybe a week or two. And if it does good, we'll go to the 1-800 number. So far, it's doing good. We're going strong with it. A lot of fight fans are appreciating it, and they're getting themselves involved. But fight fans are on hold right now. Want to talk about Amir Khan versus Zab Judah. They want to put in their prediction of what they think is going to happen. Now, if you want to call in, go ahead. We have the lines open here between me and Gabriel. It's 347-215-7598 here on Leaving the Ring. Again, 347-215-7598. Call in right now, because in about 15, 20 minutes, we're going to have to go to the fight schedule, and our 3 hours are up of boxing talk here on Leaving the Ring. What you think, Gabe? Should we patch in some fans right now?
Yeah, why not?
Let's go with Big D, who wants to talk Khan versus Judah here on the ring. What's up, brother? What's on your mind? You're on live right now.
What it do? What's happening, fellas?
Man, I'm chilling.
I want to talk about that. I just realized earlier today, Gabe, my boy, fighting Saturday too on that on the card. What's up with that?
He is.
Kid
Chocolate. One of our other guys. James Kirkland's going to be on that undercard.
Right.
I've actually got an interview with Ann Wolf coming out tomorrow. about it.
Mm-hmm.
They're fighting a guy, Alexis Loros. You know, kind of a trial horse guy. I think he's got 3 losses, 11 knockouts against, I think, 15 wins. Anne wanted somebody in the top 5, is what she told me. She feels he's not quite 100% back yet in terms of conditioning, but that she
mm-hmm.
feels he's much better than where he was in the high 90s, you know, is where she would put him.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, this is the guy they got. It was a quick turnaround from his last fight to this fight. They weren't able to secure somebody else within 5 weeks, so they got this guy. If he wins this, I expect to see him probably on the Mayweather-Ortiz undercard. That's not off of what Aaron said, but what other people are telling me. But they want to, you know, she didn't say exactly world title yet. But she
mm-hmm.
said, you know, I'm ready for him by the end of the year to be in that kind of position and certainly fighting guys in the top 10, top 5. She really
there we go.
The thing that she said most was, I like the way she described this. She said he's a conditioned fighter because we were talking about his chin. And she said, I don't know if he's
mm-hmm.
got a bad chin or this and that. And she said he wasn't in shape for the Ishida fight. He just wasn't. And
right.
now you look at him, he's in much better shape. And I don't know if he's got a bad chin or not, she said, but I know that he needs to be in 100% condition in order to take these shots because he's probably going to. That's just his style.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically where she's got him at. So we'll see.
Cool.
I think this should be a good fight. And you know, this guy's going to come. And like she said, I'm happy that people think he's vulnerable. That makes my job a little easier because everybody's going to come
mm-hmm.
straight to him. And when they get there, they're going to be not happy that they did.
Yeah.
So,
nice.
There you go. There's your
nice.
Kirkland report.
That's it. I think Khan's gonna do Zab and Gadulim, I think, late in that fight, I think, or a decision, but I just don't see. I done lost so much money over the years messing with Zab on the big I can't do it, man. I'd like for him to do it, but I hope he don't do it this time because I'm going with Khan in that and I'm gonna be having a little bit of money on Khan, so I hope you don't disappoint.
Well, it's funny. Somebody's just tweeting at me. Don't, you know, David Haye talked a good game. And you know, don't buy into the hype. And one, I think before anybody was talking about it, I was leading towards Zab when this fight was made. So I'm not buying into hype. They might be buying into
right.
mine. But two, what hype are you referring to?
I know. He hasn't really.
Khan hype or Zab Judah hype?
Judah hype. Yeah, because it's been Amir mostly talking. You know, Zab has just been like, well, if you're watching the old tapes, you know, you watched them wrong. I don't know. You know, I think both guys
but look
have
at
been,
the record. Which
yeah.
one's hype and which one's real?
Yeah.
Right.
Going back to
I
the
mean,
David Haye, I think the whole thing with the toe was just that the toe was like, this fool's saying that we're going to knock him out. That means we got to stand there and trade with them? I don't think so. And it hurt him. And it hurt him. And the way the toe got hurt was by kicking David Haye in the ass, saying, fool, you need to shut up.
I mean, basically, it all boils down to Sweet Pea can't get in the ring for him. I think just down the stretch, he's up in age now, and you got a young line coming at you, man. Khan's a big dude, man, as far as 140 pounds go, you know.
He's not a small man. That's very true.
Yeah. So I just don't see how Zab could be able to do it at this point in his career against somebody like Khan. I just don't see it happening.
You know, I just
a lot of people going with Zab though. So
I was really surprised.
Mm-hmm.
I thought when I announced I was, you know, I finally made my pick because a lot of people were asking me, and everybody and their brother said I'm picking him too, and I went, oh shit, you know, yeah, I don't know if I trust myself now. People are agreeing with me, but it's one of those things that I was breaking down Amir's resume, and this way, like Ronnie did. And you look at it since he's been knocked out, okay, you know, Barrera, who was ancient, Osen Fagan, who we've never heard of and we never
right.
will, you know, this McCloskey guy. The Maidana win is really, and then Malignaggi, who was kind of out of his weight class anyways and just out of his class. You know, he's also a fighter that I think is very much past it. Where's the substance? Why should I believe that? You know, the guys that Judah's lost to are elite fighters.
Right.
He hasn't lost to, you know, besides Carlos Baldomir, you know, he was not an elite fighter. Other than that, you know, but he was also a very physical guy. He was a bigger guy, kind of pushed him around. And I still believe, even though Zab won that title, he was not really ever a welterweight. Now you look at Khan and you say, well, okay, who have you been competitive with that compares to the guys that Dab's even lost to? You know, much less the guys that Dab has beaten. And I can't find them on his resume.
Right.
So is he hype or is he substance? Is this fight his step-up fight and he gets past Judah and then he moves on to bigger, better things? It's hard to see through the smoke and mirrors of it all. It's an interesting fight. I like it a lot better than the Bradley fight for some reason. Maybe because of the one-punch power that's involved.
If it goes past five rounds, Khan could get him, man. Zab, I see only Zab shot, man, is doing it early, doing it somewhat early, you know, before five rounds.
Well, he got Medusa
in he showed in the past, man, that stamina just ain't his thing. And, you know, I don't see how he's going to be able to take them shots at Khan. He's a bigger dude, man. You know he's going to be coming in there probably 150-something probably.
Yeah. And you know what, though, D? The only thing that what I see is that, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, Khan is going to bring it to him. And if he does come out fast and he tries to come out strong, to me personally, he leaves that open door for Zab Judah to walk in and catch him and then close the door back up. You know what I mean? Khan's just got to be really intelligent in this fight, in my opinion. He's got to drag it out. You know, he's got to pick his spots. He's got to pick his wars, you know, and Zab's a crafty guy as well. But you're absolutely right. That stamina thing is the big question here. Is that you got two things: stamina versus patience. Who's gonna be, you know, Khan? Are you gonna be patient? Are you gonna let you take over, or are you gonna think like a veteran, which is have strategy, be strategic about your next move, be a chess player? Zab has it all. He has all the pawns on his side right now, meaning he's got the younger guy that needs to come in, can open up and do the dumb thing, which he gets dropped. He could drop Khan and get him hurt. There's a lot of I honestly see a lot of pros leaning with Judah, where the cons are more with Khan himself, you know?
I look at the stamina thing, too, and a lot of people are saying that there's hype here. I'm really kind of measuring this fight. I'm really narrowing it to not living in the past. I'm looking at Zab's run with Main Events, which is where he's made his training changes. He's made his mental change, which Ronnie talked about, as probably being the most. And like Steve Kim on our site has covered him for years, and he said the same thing. This is a different person. He said, it's kind of funny, but he was like, he only dropped one, you know what I'm saying, the whole conversation. And that was, you know, and when you talk to Zab, you would get like 20 or 30 of them, you know, every other word. He's matured as a person. And so you look at these runs, you look from when Khan got knocked out to now, and from the first Main Events fight, which was the Santa Cruz fight, to now. And say they kind of have similar fights. Maidana and Matisse, those are very similar fights where both guys got kind of hurt late and were winning early but kind of faded out late. I think Khan faded out worse late than Judah did in his Matisse fight. And he got dropped and hurt in that fight as well as Khan did. And I have to say that I think that Judah in his last few fights has looked better than Amir Khan. I don't know if I'm crazy, but they're kind of similar guys, Matisse and Maidana. And I thought Judah looked better. And that's just me. Some people don't think that Judah even won that fight. And it's pretty debatable.
Let me ask you a game.
What's that?
You actually thought he won against, I think Matisse beat him, man.
I thought he beat him, too. I think he won that one as well. You know, I just think that. But if you cannot compare Khan to Matisse, it's a different fighter.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That, styles make fights. And I think that Khan's style fits a lot better for Zab Judah, in my opinion. I think it works better for him. You know, it's a guy that – Matisse is an awkward guy. He's a guy that throws wide shots. He's a guy that can take a punch. He's a strong kid. He comes forward. He's nonstop. Khan, too, has shown – fatigue in the ring as well. He's shown he is kicking gas out. He has shown amateur ism out of his arsenal when he steps into the ring. Khan, I think Gabriel summed it up fairly well. Khan is still trying to find out who is Amir Khan. Is he a king or is he a Kong? You know?
He did have trouble with Matisse, who's no Amir Khan, apparently. But at the same time, well, also, you know, Amir hasn't fought him yet, so we don't know who's better than those guys. But, you know, to me, what it says about Zab was that he had a tough, close fight. He comes out with the win, and regardless of how you feel about it, but then he made yet another change. And then he brings in Pernell Whitaker, and what's the result of his next fight? And I've been watching tape of all these fights this past two weeks. Mabuza and Prescott are kind of similar rough-and-tumble guys, not known for being punchers, but they're big people for their weight class. And Zab knocked his out, and Khan got knocked out by his. Now, Khan's made a lot of changes, too, since then. It's hard to hold that against him. But look at that change. He adds Whitaker, and deep in a fight, they're not deep, but, you know, deep in the seventh round, heading into the back end of the fight, the back quarter, he knocks the guy out pretty much with one punch. That says a lot about that. And what he thinks of himself and what he can bring to the table at this stage of his career.
Well, if Khan loses this, boy. Freddie Roach could be out of Shit Creek, boy. Oh, man. He got his next fight planned out and everything else. And Zab might be that monkey wrench.
Yep.
But my thing is, ever since I lost money, I lost about $200, it was, when he fought Cotto. I said, that was it, man. I ain't messing with Zab no more, man. Fuck money. I said, man.
Hey, you know,
this is something, too. You know, one of the guys I talk to a lot is Justin Fortune, and who's, you know, kind of partners with Freddie, was the original strength guy for Manny Pacquiao, trained him for a fight and all that. Everybody knows their history. But his contention is that Freddie is not, he's a good strategist going into the fight, but in the fight, he doesn't believe he's a very good strategist. And you really look at some of the, like the Bernabe Concepcion fight, that the one that he just lost. Watch Freddie Roach in the corner. There's no adjustments. You just got to fight harder. You've got to throw more punches.
Man, watch the Khan and Madonna fight. You know what I mean? There was
no adjustment.
Nothing.
No adjustment. And
you
so
know?
I wonder, you know, like Juani says, it's really going to come down to who can bring their fighter home. And I wonder if there's going to be adversity, if Freddie Roach is going to be able to bring Khan home.
And there's no GPS to Khan's chin whatsoever.
Oh, no. Yeah, there's no app to fix
that.
Yeah, once
I like that.
Yeah, once it's gone, baby.
You know what I mean? Hey, brother.
Yeah,
hey, dude, thanks for calling in, brother. We got to do our fight schedule here for the rest of the to the listeners and stuff. And then we have one more call or two as well. I'll put you on hold, brother.
All right, fella.
Really quick, man, because Chris has been on hold. He wants to talk about Ponce de Leon versus Gamboa, and then we got to go to our fight schedule, and then we got to say good night. So, Chris, you're on live right now on Leaving the Ring, brother. What's on your mind about that fight?
Well, I just basically think Gamboa is going to blitz de Leon out in three rounds. I just think he's a very special fighter. He brings a very, very explosive arsenal of hand speed and power put together, and I think De Leon is a little bit too slow. He's going to find himself feeling how he did against Lopez.
I don't know, man. I'm going to have to hold off. I'm going to bite my tongue for a minute because one, I got ice in my mouth. Let me take it out of here because it's super hot over here. I don't have air conditioning. Some of us don't have the luxuries to afford air conditioning and stuff, so it's super hot in my office. But I don't know. It's too early for me to even talk about that fight, in my opinion, man. I'm just glad that it's going to go down. But
I hear
what you got to say. Gamboa, man, special guy, special fighter, but got plenty of flaws, though, to make this fight worthwhile and exciting. Ponce de Leon, to me, is just a completely different fighter from when he fought Juanma Lopez. Juanma Lopez is another guy that's going out to Mexico to check out, I believe it's Orlando Salido, right? He's going out to check out this guy. Yeah. So his conqueror there. And but I hear what you say, man. And you know what? It's a possible thing because Ponce de Leon has been knocked out in the first round. So his chin is definitely – it's still got to be in question, even though Broner did test it out. But Broner, I don't think punches as hard as Gamboa or the speed factor. You know, they always say it's the one you don't see. It's the one that catches you, and you end up on your buttocks the way Rogers did it, you know?
I'm
very curious about the fight because this Gamboa's kind of chinny himself.
Exactly.
And, if, you know, and he gets kind of wide. He throws wide punches. De Leon throws a little bit straighter punches, throws kind of an awkward overhand punch as well. I think it's an interesting fight. I think the speed is the difference. But to me, you know, Gamboa is still a guy that's proving himself. He's got under 20 fights, doesn't have the same experience. And he's facing a legit puncher in Ponce de Leon. I think it's a really dangerous fight. I think it's an exciting fight. I could see your scenario playing out just because of history, but I think that if you're game planning for the guy that lost to Juan Ma Lopez, you got to pay attention to the changes that he's made in his camp. He's not even with those trainers anymore. He's got new guys, or at least he's added some new guys, and Dub Hubley is the most noteworthy of them. That's really added a little bit of funk to his game. So I don't know. You know, it is a little early to make a prediction on that fight. But, you know, obviously you got to lean with Gamboa in it. But I don't know if I would pick him to be De Leon to be blown out just yet. I can't wait, though. It's going to be a great fight.
I'm a Gamboa fan, so, you know.
Absolutely.
How can you not be? I mean, the guy is fun. I just wish he would fight more often, you know.
Right. And you know what?
Seems like
when you interview him, he's almost the same way. I mean, I had a chance to interview him, 3 years ago, and it's up on YouTube on our, not our Leaving the Ring, but the 97 Rough, the one I started off first. Dude, I mean, the way he is in the ring is pretty much the way he is out of the ring. You know, he's very talkative, very animated, and he generally loves the boxing public. He's like so amazing how everybody clings on to him. You know what I mean? Overall, he's a good guy, man. And this is going to be a good fight.
I just want to say one thing. His hand speed kind of reminds me of almost like Meldrick Taylor, but with a lot more power. You know what I mean?
With a lot more power. Yeah.
Explosive. I haven't really seen fighters who throw hooks and uppercuts that fast in like a long time.
Yeah.
Long time. Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, it's legit speed. I mean, it's kind of the way, you know, speed is such a strange thing to see in the gym. You know, you really got to see it for yourself. And I remember watching Amir Khan for the first time work the mitts with Freddie when he first got to the States. And that's one of the fastest human beings I've ever seen. He's got ridiculous hand speed. And seeing it up close like that, you really can't appreciate it. You know, like Manny's fast, but it's also kind of like that explosive fast, like Dave, you were talking about earlier. Amir is just pure speed, man, and it comes in bunches. So, I mean, this weekend I can almost see that kind of scenario where he lands something crazy because of the speed, you know, whereas I wonder if Zab's head movement and all that stuff is as fast as it used to be. But, you know, we'll see. You know, it should be interesting.
Exactly.
All of them are going to be excellent fights, explosive fights. I'm just glad that these kind of fights are being made now.
Yep. Yep, I mean we're having a really good year, man. I mean all these fights being put together and stuff. And I know we haven't had a chance to talk about everything. 3 hours just is not enough. I think they need to add another 3 hours here for Leaving the Ring, man, because we do got a lot of calls that people are still waiting on hold. I apologize, Chris. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay, brother?
All right.
I apologize for everybody else that's on hold right now. They've been waiting to get on, and like I said, if you're not able to get on live here on the show and you're catching it on archive or you just can't get on at this moment, don't worry about it. Go to the boxing hotline that we've developed at 323-300-5414. Give us your prediction. Give us your rant. It doesn't matter, man, as long as it's boxing related. We want to hear it, and we'll post it up. Fight schedule from Gabriel Montoya. What's up, brother? What do we got?
Okay, give me 1 second. Let me pull it up. And here we go with this weekend's fight schedule. And the Wednesday fight already happened, so I won't even mention that. July 22nd, Friday, at the Morongo Casino in Cabazon, California, where the giant dinosaur lives. On ESPN2, Friday Night Fights, Anthony Durrell, 22-0, versus Alejandro Berrio, 32-5. Actually, I think the opponent might have been changed for this fight, so we'll just call it the dreaded TBA. Also on that card, Joseph Alegale, 12-0 versus Leonard Lane, 12-1.
Julian Williams, young prospect, 6-0-1 versus Raul Rodriguez, 2-5-1. And then that same night, at the Casino del Sol in Tucson, Arizona, on Telefutura, Christopher Martin, 22-0-2 versus Jose Silveira, 12-3. And then moving on to July 23rd, Saturday, at the Mandalay Bay Casino in Las Vegas, Nevada, on HBO, regular HBO, Amir Khan, 25-1 versus Zab Judah, 41-6 for the WBA Junior Welterweight Belt. Dave and I are both, I believe, going with Zab Judah. Actually, I'm going with Zab Judah. You're going with Zab. Right?
Yeah, I'm going with Zab.
We're going with
Zab. Yeah.
Underneath that, Gary Russell Jr., 16-0 versus Paul Truscott, 17-2. Peter Quillen, 24-0 versus Jason LaHoulier, 21-5-1. James Kirkland, 28-1 versus Alexis Loros. Ronnie Rios, 14-0 versus Noe Lopez, 7-8. And Bryant Jennings, 8-0 versus Theron Johnson, 5-5. At the Centro de Osos Multiples, Ciudad Obregón, Mexico, Fox Sports, Orlando Salido, 35-11-2, takes on Kenichi Yamaguchi, 17-1-2 for the WBO featherweight belt. Also on Fox Sports, in support, Alejandro Vasquez, 25-5-2 versus Enrique Bamache, 17-2. At the Wembley Arena in London, England, you'll be catching this if you're in the U.S. on streams earlier in the day. Tyson Fury, 14-0 versus Derek Chisora, who's also 14-0 and heavyweights in action. Also on that pay-per-view is Ashley Theophane, 29-4-1 versus Jason Cook, 28-3-1. And that is your weekend fight schedule. Although there is one, if you can catch it, and you can actually catch this, I believe, through Max Boxing. If you go on there, there's a big banner. Also on Doghouse Boxing, they've got banners that lead to it. At the Castle Leisure Center in Bury, England, Scott Quigg, 21-0 versus Franklin Varela, 19-5. If you haven't seen Scott Quigg, this kid, I don't believe he's with Frank Warren or any of the major promoters, but this kid can really fight, man. He turns on angles about as good as anybody I've seen in terms of the prospect level fighters. I watched him work at the wild card a couple summers back. This kid's really the goods. I really like him a lot. Very much an action fighter. Not so much so sure about the power, but certainly the technical skill is there and the speed. So check that one out if you can. You can look for that on Max Boxing. And that's it, Dave. That's all I got.
Well, there we go, man. And, again, I had another great time here on Leaving the Ring. Be sure to check us out every Thursday night at 5 o'clock West Coast time, 8 o'clock East Coast time, here on Leaving the Ring with myself, David Duenas, and Gable Montoya. If you want to send us an email at our leavingtheRing@gmail.com, you sure can. And, again, if you want to get on the boxing hotline that we have up 24/7, it's a voicemail service. So you call in 323-354-14. Tell us your thoughts. You can recap the interviews that we did. You can talk about your prediction of the Zab Judah Amir Khan. You can talk about anything basically that's boxing related on there. Hey, man, you have a good night. Be careful. Don't drink and drive, everybody. Have a good night on Saturday night. Until next week, Thursday, we'll be back on Leaving the Ring. Hey, man, also try to catch up with our new our partners here, the Boxing Lab, who's a friend of ours. Ernesto Gabillon used to be with us, and the timing was just bad because he couldn't get on at the same time we were on. So he created a show called The Boxing Lab. He had Alfredo Angulo on as the first guest with Brandon Rios. It was a pretty good show to start it off, man, to start the kickoff there. So if you have a chance, go and show some support to The Boxing Lab as well. I'm all done. I'm spent. I've been sweating. I'm tired. It's hot. I'm ready to go crack open a brewski, brother. What about you? I know you're ready to go to Vegas.
Yeah, I'm ready to go to Vegas. I still got a couple stories to go. I got one on Danielle Livingston coming out later tonight or early in the morning. And then I've got one on Ann Wolf coming out Saturday morning, Friday night. By that point, I'll be in Vegas. And Vegas has been put on warning. Dave, it's the fastest 3 hours of boxing. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. We should probably add another hour or something. But pleasure as always, man. And I will call you from Vegas and give you a little, post fight, what people are thinking. And I'll catch you next week.
All right, brother. You take care, man. Everybody else, thank you for calling in. Thank you for listening. Thank you for the support. And like always, man, keep the sport alive.
Peace.